You're listening to the Men Overseas Podcast, the show that explores methods and ideas to help you live a bigger life. You will hear interesting stories of how people live, how they save and invest their money, and why having time wealth is better than being a billionaire. If you are entertained, educated, or elevated, be sure to hit the subscribe button. We're just getting started. Now here is your host, Brad D'Antonio.
Hello, beautiful listeners. Can't thank you enough for joining me today. If this is your first time listening, I want to extend a special welcome to you. If this is your 80th time listening, you're just as welcomed, and I'm glad you're here. I wouldn't have a show without you folks. So thank you. You're in for a treat today. My guest is Harry Corcell. Harry is one of a kind. And you might think, well, I'll bet he says that about everybody. Like if it's your first time listening. No, I don't say that about everybody. In fact, I have never said that about a previous guest. So why is Harry one of a kind? I would tell you it has a lot to do with his breadth of experience. So he's lived in Boston. He moved to Boston from Columbia when he was 8 years old. He's lived in Brooklyn, which when I asked him if he had one place to live in America, what would it be? And he said, Brooklyn. So he loves Brooklyn. He loves Houston. He's been living in Houston. I got a fortuitous bounce in that I was able to get him to record the day before moving to Miami, Florida. And speaking of fortuitous bounces, Harry can not only sell software with the best of them, that's how he and I met in the late 2000s, but on the hardwoods, Harry's got a hook shot that's tough to defend. When you think Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you know, when you get up there with the hook and you kind of use that other arm to create some space for yourself, it's hard to defend. So Harry can do it on the hardwoods. He can do it in the boardroom if he's selling to IT execs. But Harry can also do it on stage. So his side hustle is stand-up comedy. And I think that is the coolest thing. And the reason I think it's so cool is because you have to pay attention in order to get material. And I think about this way as it pertains to journaling. So in order to have something to journal about, you need to be aware. You have to have a high level of awareness and pay attention to your day so you have something to write about in your journal. All right, it's almost like seeing your life as a movie. Well, imagine if you got paid to make people laugh. You couldn't just stay inside all day. You'd have to have more experiences. And I have never met anyone in my life who more appreciates the little experiences in life than my guest today, Harry Corcell. And so that's something we talk about, is his gratitude for just being alive and the little experiences that he has and overcoming fear of failure. So the guy has moved from Boston to Brooklyn to Houston and now to Miami. If he's got fear, it sure doesn't show. But he's also, you know, I mentioned his athletic prowess on the hardwoods. He's also an intellectual type. So he could talk about Joseph Campbell's The Power of Myth or The Hero's Journey. In fact, when somebody I respect recommends a book, I typically buy that book within an hour with one click, right? You could do it at a red light. And that's what I did. As I traveled back to our Airbnb in Houston, I bought The Power of Myth. And it's linked probably two or three times in the show notes if you want to buy it also. But that's the deal he did with Bill Moyers. Definitely, I'm only probably a third of the way through, but definitely worth a listen. Harry's a fan of The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. No surprise there, because he's a journaler, as am I. All of these things I'm mentioning make you a better conversationalist. And that's why Harry and I can do the dance. And that's knowing that he can do the dance, and I'm using the dance as a euphemism for conversation. that's why I wanted to get him on the podcast so badly. I knew he was smart and sharp and would have a great memory and be a great storyteller, because you cannot be a great salesperson, or I wouldn't think a comedian, but I don't know as much about comedy, without being a great storyteller. And so Harry is that. He's a father of three. He's someone I like and respect a whole lot. He tells stories about meeting O.J. Simpson. I mean, this is something you need to hear. And so I'm going to cut my intro shorter than I usually. Well, I want to promote his daughter's Instagram account real quick. Strings by P&F. I want you to check that out, because I'm probably going to buy my daughter something when we get back to the States. And I just wanted to get that plug in there before I bring on one of the great ones, a guy by the name of Harry Corsell. Please enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Harry Corsell, I am so glad to have you on the podcast, buddy.
Dude, you have no idea. I have been looking forward to this since I saw you at the gym, and it's going to be fun. I'm looking so much forward to this, man.
What were you doing at the gym, Harry? You're not a guy that I thought would be at the gym every day, but every day I saw you in there, you were not only in there, but you were sweating your balls off.
That's what I was doing. I was sweating real hard. So what were your first impressions of me, Brad?
Well, I was thinking, this guy's trying to get a girl, because nobody works out this hard every day. And he's new to Houston.
Yeah
he's got a new lease on life. Those are my thoughts.
And that's what Houston's been for me. It's been a new lease on life. I mean, both times.
It took about a month, and suddenly Harry is posting Facebook pics with a gal kissing his cheek.
Yeah.
And I start seeing her about every 3 days, and I'm like, God damn, it worked. You just got to get in the gym and better yourself, and they will come.
It's that betterment mindset. You and I had this conversation. It's like, what books are you reading? What podcasts are you listening to? What are you doing to make your life better, right? And that's what Houston's been for me, is
Hustle Town.
I've never seen anybody hustle down here the way that people hustle in Houston. Like, everybody's got to hustle. Yeah. Everybody's got to hustle, and it's amazing to watch.
Yeah. So what have you gained these last couple years that you've been here?
Yeah, that's a great question. When I was in Boston, because I went through a divorce and, you know, child custody and all that stuff, it wasn't until I got to Houston that I could get away from that environment and I could get help, right? Mm. So the first thing I did was, I went to the gym, and that was for my physical state, right? Then I found a really good therapist. I read a book years ago called The Body Keeps Score.
The Body Keeps Score. I've heard of it.
Yeah. So it one of the things it did, it talked about this therapy, and it's I call it voodoo therapy, because what it is, it balances your brainwaves. And so what I did was I went in there, and you process trauma differently. So the trauma doesn't become a memory. I had bad PTSD, like everything would set me off when I was in Boston. So I found a therapist. We had these hand chakra things, go through the memory, and I could feel my mind, my brain alternating there. And so you'd start off and the trauma would be like really high.
You know? But people can't see you when you say there. You're pointing to a spot in your head where you felt a vibration
or something? Yeah, vibration. That's exactly it. It's EMDR therapy.
EMDR therapy?
Yeah.
And it works.
It because you process the memories. So you take the most traumatic event. So I was in 9/11. Like, I saw the second tower collapse. I was living in New York City. And that every 9/11, I relive that memory. And I could still feel, like, I could still smell the smells. Like, it was like a burnt tire smell. There was ash coming down. And I was living in Brooklyn. I wasn't even in Manhattan. You know, I could still see the people's faces crying. So I had PTSD from that. And so I went to this lady, and we did this therapy for about a year. And it got me to the point now, you know, where I'm like, okay, I'm healthy. You know, like, I'm physically healthy. I'm mentally healthy. I'm in a good place. Like, things don't affect me like they did before. Because I felt like you're in a pinball machine when you have PTSD. Like, you're reacting to everything. And in Houston, I could spend that time and just get healthy.
And so you found a job here. Did you throw yourself into the job and the gym and just focus on personal growth?
Well, I focused on personal growth. I mean, that was the biggest. The job was just the job. It's a high-tech job. I started off with the old company, Idera, and just realized, like, it wasn't a good fit for me. You know, it wasn't the company that you and I worked at. It was a good company, but like, we had fun at the Red House.
We did.
You know, we all get to be friends. You know, we all kind of keep in touch with each other.
Lifelong friends.
Yeah, and seriously, like absolutely. You know, I just spent last night with Chris Heffernan. One of the most fun nights of my life down here. Wouldn't want to do it again. Would not want to do it again. But it was great. Like, it was really, really good to reconnect with people. Rodeo, I was with Steve Duncan. You know, and he's doing fantastic. He's doing fantastic. You know,
I meet Tom Adovasio for coffee every once in a while.
He's a great guy.
Great dude. I used to say, I've got one of my best friends is my dad's age, and that's Tom Adovasio.
That's it.
He's 70 years old.
Yeah, and he's a Tommy Gun. I used to call him Tommy Gun.
He's a great dude.
He's a great guy, you know, but that was Idera. Yeah. You know, like, that was Idera, and we'd all go in there, and we'd do our top 250, and we, you know, and it was miserable. It wasn't fun. And then Jim Legge would be calling every deal over $3,000 and all that fun stuff, and phone times. But then at the end of the quarter, you'd be sitting by the fax machine. Remember the fax machine and the gong and the big gong?
Yeah.
And you get your big deals in, and you walked out with an X amount of dollars, and you're like, oh, my God, this is great, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was fun.
Because of the spiff payments. They give us $100 cash. $100
cash.
For some of the deals that we'd close.
I haven't had those spiff payments ever.
I know.
It was fun.
Somebody bring back the Red House. Jim, if you're listening.
Jim, come bring it back. Sam, I think you still owe me a couple $100.
How great was Sam?
That's what I'm saying.
Part of that house was fantastic.
It was a great memory. It was like being in a fraternity, but we were selling software.
Even the CEO, CFO, we all liked.
York Richards, yeah. He was a great guy. He was like an Aggie. He's like, I don't know if we could do this deal. And then all of a sudden the deal got done. But it was a great time. Like, that's how I came to Houston the first time. My buddy Chris got me a job down there. And the first time I moved down here, I was like, oh, I got to move to Houston. Like, the last place I ever would think I would ever live in was Houston, Texas. And I was like, oh, it's going to be a cowboy culture and all this sort of stuff. And I got here, and I lived right at the lots at the ballpark, and I bought a house in the Heights, and it was just fun. Like, it was way different than anything else I'd ever experienced.
Now, you probably didn't see a pair of cowboy boots or a hat
ever,
at all.
Ever, yeah. Ever. Like, the only time was a rodeo, and right. I was like, you know, and it just kind of stuck with me. And so when I had the opportunity, you know, 9 years later, I could have moved anywhere. And it was between Tampa, because I had a couple friends in Tampa. I thought about Austin, and I thought about Houston. And I was talking with a friend of mine, and they were like, well, you like Houston, you know, like it's in my DNA.
Well, this apartment that you have is so awesome, dude. You're within walking distance of Minute Maid Park,
right?
So you could go to any game. It's a loft style, I mean, bachelor pad. I couldn't be more impressed with the place. And you said it's what, like $13?
Yeah, I have a New York loft style apartment for $1,300. You know,
nuts.
And my neighbors, a couple of my neighbors down the hall are fellow comics. Like, I can walk down to the secret group. I'm right where I want to be. Like, right, you know, and I chose to be here. Like, Brad, I chose to come back to Houston. You know, and it's been the best decision I ever made.
So you're into comedy?
Yeah, I do stand up.
How does that happen?
Oh, God. I've been doing it forever. Like, I was doing it. I've always kind of been a fish out of water, right? So I was born in Bogota, Colombia, and I moved to Boston when I was 8 years old.
Okay. So you lived in Bogota.
Yeah.
Probably during, like, the Medellin cartel years.
If I did, I didn't know what was going on. Mm. I was innocent.
Yeah.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. But, yeah, and I grew up in Boston. And then I moved to New York. I was selling tires for NTB, and I moved to New York. And NTB was owned by Sears, and I was selling tires on Flatbush Ave and Sears. And I was the only white guy, and I was doing comedy at night. And I did not fit in at all. Like, I was miserable.
You were bombing on stage?
No, I was doing fine on stage. I mean, I was, no, no, no. Like, at work, I was the only white person at Sears.
Mm.
My coworkers wouldn't talk to me. They thought I was an undercover cop. No, I'm serious. Like, I wish I was making it up.
Yeah.
And I realized I wasn't going to change the culture. I needed to change. So I went down and I started playing basketball with my coworkers. After that, everything changed. Like, I was part of the in-crew. Like, I was like, yeah, Harry, he's one of us. He's just lighter skinned. Like, that literally, that's how I get introduced.
So you can move the rock?
Back in the day, I'm 52. I can't do
anything. I mean, what kind of player are you? Are you a Stockton? Are you a Malone?
I'm a passer.
Okay.
I used to be able to shoot.
Like from the post?
Oh, yeah,
like
everywhere.
Pass from the post, okay.
A lot of hook shots. My friends in Boston think I'm dirty. Yes, I am.
You're a bit of a Rodman.
I'm a way Rodman. Yeah. I have no outside. I used to be able to shoot, but, you know, that was a thing. That was a revelation. Like, I needed to adapt. I needed to change. Same thing when I got to Houston. Like, I was a fish out of water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at Idea, I was the Northeast guy, you know, and I'm like, okay. So I had to go in and, you know, I'd never had Cajun food before. I love Etouffee now. Like, I'm stuff like that, you know. I can't eat crawfish because I don't have the patience for the bugs. But everything else about Houston, I was like, okay, I love baseball. So I'd go to the Astros games.
But the comedy, where does the comedy come
so
in?
I started doing comedy. I had an internship at Warner Brothers in California, and I got back to Boston, and my friend Corwin Gaines was doing stand-up. And so I met him at a club one time, at a dance club, and he's like, you're funny. You could do stand-up. And I'd taken, you know, I went to Emerson College. I took a lot of writing classes. I took a lot of speech classes, all that stuff, but I never did stand up. So he bamboozles my way into getting into the Comedy Connection, which is like the hottest club on a Tuesday night. The place was packed, like packed. There were 500 people there. The MC was DJ Hazard, and he was just phenomenal. Like, we're still buddies to this day. One of the most funniest original guys, brings me up on stage. I'd never done comedy in front of, like, live people before. My left leg was shaking.
How long did you work on your material?
I worked on that material for probably 6 weeks.
Okay.
You know, my leg was shaking, and I was getting laughs. And it was, like, the biggest...
Rush.
Comedy is the biggest high.
Oh, God, I can't imagine. Yeah.
No, because you're connecting with strangers.
Yeah.
And that's what helps me in sales, because I can break that ice.
Was it weird to wait for the laugh after it carries from the microphone to the 500 people in the room?
It was just, I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
So I'm literally telling my jokes, and I'm getting laughs. And I'm like, what the heck is going on?
Yeah.
Like, literally, I'm like, whoa, what? You know, they're laughing at the stuff I'm writing.
You probably hit that flow state where you, like, weren't there anymore.
I was driving a driverless car.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it was. I was just, I was just, like, trying to get through it. And then everybody afterwards, they didn't know it was my first time. They're like, oh, my God, you're good. You're good. And then it was downhill from there. Just right downhill from there. Like, everything else was just, like...
Downhill meaning easy? Everything was
easy. No, just the opposite.
Life was downhill from
No, comedy was down. Like, the rooms weren't as good, you know, like, it was like that. I peaked at my first, you never forget your first time. I mean, you know, I can still remember, you know, I was 24, 25 years old. I was supposed to play in a softball all-star game, and I'm like, no, I'm going to do this comedy thing. And, you know, as soon as my friends from my hometown of Natick, Massachusetts found out, like, they packed the place. Like, it was standing room only. Like, they packed the place. And it was in Faneuil Hall. Have you ever been to Boston?
Yeah, but just to go to Fenway and that kind of thing.
How'd you like Fenway?
Loved it.
Yeah.
It's my second favorite park.
What's your favorite park?
Wrigley.
Yeah? You're a traditionalist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like Minute Maid because I can fit in the seats. That's it. I can fit in the seats. And I'm not, you know, I'm 6 foot. And I like Fenway, but I hate Fenway.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost 1 and 1A, and I say Wrigley because I grew up watching WGN. We got in Louisiana for some reason.
Yeah.
Otherwise, had I grown up watching the Red Sox, I'd probably say Fenway. So it's kind of a 1 and 1A.
Yeah, I like the newer parks. You know, I like the energy of the newer parks.
Have you been to the one in Arlington?
Not yet.
Yeah, don't go.
All right.
Okay. It's symmetrical. It's like a mall. It's overly air conditioned.
I mean, yeah, yeah.
And it's weird. It makes you feel like an excessive American walking out.
Yeah.
And seeing this other field that was just built like 25 years ago.
Right.
That's just sitting there doing nothing.
Right, right.
It just feels excessive and wasteful.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, you're in Texas and everything's excessive and wasteful.
Exactly,
you know,
like,
you know.
Yeah, it's so Dallas.
Yeah. No, I get it. But that's how I started comedy. And then I started doing more shows. And eventually I was getting paid. And then I had... at one point, I had an audition. I didn't get it, and there was no way I was going to get it for Fred Flintstone. This was in 1998. And so I went down to New York, and I'm like, I'm just going to move down to New York. So I had a friend of mine who lived in New York, and I transferred, and I started selling tires. And I was a fish out of water, like literally fish out of water, didn't fit in, all that sort of stuff. Started playing basketball. Then I was eating jerk chicken. And then they found out I like rap, and then we started talking about rap. And to this day, one of my best friends, Gangster Fred.
Gangster Fred.
Dude, this kid is a beast.
Like, guy or white guy?
Black guy. You don't have a nickname. I gave him the nickname Gangster Fred. But he is. His brother played football at URI. This kid is a beast.
What is that, Rhode Island?
University of Rhode Island. Okay. He's a Ram. Held the all-time rushing record at one point.
Okay.
He is a beast. Like, when I tell you, like, he's like 6'1", not an ounce of fat on him. He lifts like he's in jail.
Yeah.
Like, lifts like he's in jail. We couldn't be more opposite. And to this day, like, we're still like, yo, what's up? What's going on? What are you up to? You know, his kids, all that sort of stuff. And he's just like one of my best friends.
It's almost like the media manipulates us to think that whites and blacks don't like each other.
Dude, I get along better with black people. I do more black comedy clubs down here than I do white comedy clubs.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like you find out, like, people are people.
People are people.
But his
so how
brother.
How can it be?
Yeah, absolutely. His brother was a scout for the Patriots. And I remember going down to Rhode Island, and I'd moved back to Boston at that point, and the Patriots had just beaten the Rams, and he lived in his brother Fronzie lived, it was a dump. That's the only way I could describe it. You know, when you're a scout for any team, you start off at the bottom, right? Like, you start off breaking down tapes at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Right? He was literally taking food out of the locker room. His refrigerator was stocked with Gatorade. I mean, he had a tiny little TV. He lived in East Providence, and he drove a minivan that the Patriots kind of gave him. And he was working these long hours, and then he pulled out a Super Bowl ring, and it was just amazing to hold. You know, they just the Patriots had just beaten the Rams the year before. He'd just gotten the Super Bowl ring. He lived in this dump of an apartment, but that was his one prized possession. And so I kept up with Fred 20 years later. Every time he'd go to New England, I'd go to a game with him and his brother Fronzie. And so I got to meet a lot of the scouts, not just from the Patriots, but from other teams. And, you know, we'd go to these games. Most of the time, I didn't have a ticket. I would just go in, and he had a swipe card. So he'd swipe me in, and we'd be right by the pro shop, and I'd see Belichick's office. And then we'd go up to the draft room. And so before the game, we're in the draft room, and Willie McGinnis would walk in. He'd be like, hey, boys, how you doing? What's going on? And after the game, we had these bracelets, and we'd go underneath the stadium, and the families would be there. So Vince Wilfork, his wife, Marky Mark was there. Doug Flutie's from my hometown.
Marky Mark's pretty much my idol.
Yeah, he's a good guy. Doug Flutie's from my hometown. And he sees me. I know Doug. I've known him for years. And he sees me at the game. He's like, hey, Harry, what are you doing here? My buddy Fred was like, I told him, I go, I know Doug. His jaw just dropped. But, yeah, I mean, I've held, like, 9 Super Bowl rings, you know. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was, but you never know. Like, he's a guy from Brooklyn. You know, we just became friends because we both like basketball.
Let me ask you this. How long you been in sales?
Too long, 20 years.
What are the parallels between sales and dating, do you think?
Well, I suck at both. I always pick the wrong ones. You know, I think you gotta, you know, you gotta have a funnel, right? You gotta,
yes.
You gotta have a half decent product.
Pipeline.
Marketing has to be like, we had the best marketing people at Idera. So Janet, mm-hmm. Janet Dayhall, if you're listening to this, can you help me with my Tinder profile? Eleanor, you too, man. I need a good marketing babe to help me out because I have no.
Those girls were good.
Oh,
sales and marketing usually, but
yeah,
heads, not at Idera.
No,
gals,
I that they were see legit. That's where I learned to really work with marketing. And so when I was at Oracle, people ask me why I have a Cleveland hat all the time. I did an event with the Indians. Like I got a box at the Indians, and I just invited customers. It was awesome, and it was just so much fun. Like the Progressive, have you ever been there?
No.
It's a cool field. It's right in downtown. It's open, so you can kind of see the game. Cleveland's a dump, right? Mm. Let's not kid each other. It's not as glamorous as Houston, but it was a great place to watch a game. You know, mm. And I like Terry Francona. I think he's a great manager. He's an old school, by the book manager. But yeah, I think he's a great manager. And it was just amazing. You know, like it reminded me like a lot of Houston because you could get tickets cheap. Mm. Now I'm on YouTube. I'm watching Lofton highlights. I'm like, that guy was good.
Yeah, he was. Kenny Lofton?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was good. He's a leadoff.
Yeah, he was hitting home runs.
They don't make them like that anymore.
No.
People don't want to steal 50 bags anymore.
No, they don't. It's a lot of work. That's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. Oh, no. Believe me. I used to be a base stealer, and when you take off, you're taking off full speed, and when that guy swings at a pitch over his head or in the dirt – and fouls it off, and then you have to go back to first and take your lead again, and they throw to first to pick you off, and then you brush off, and then you take your lead again, and you're like, am I going to steal on this next pitch?
All right.
And then you do, and then they foul it off again, and you're like, golly, by the time I get to home plate, I'm going to be exhausted. Okay, parallels between sales and comedy.
Sales is storytelling, and I feel – if I can make somebody laugh during a sales call,
mm-hmm.
I got them. Mm. I got a good shot at getting them. Especially the past, I don't know, 2 years, especially coming down here where I literally have been, you know, doing so many different rooms, playing black clubs, playing white clubs, you know, just all over the city. I've gotten really comfortable again, like very comfortable. I can break the ice pretty well with my customers, right? And then with stand-up, like, you need to promote yourself. Like, you need to promote social media, right? There's a certain artistic point, right? And then there's a certain business point. And you got to, like, the good comics will have both, right? Like, Bill Burr promotes himself really well. He's just about to play Fenway. He's the first comic ever to play Fenway.
That's the world we live in today.
Right.
Trump became president.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You have to be able to promote yourself.
And right.
I hate that because I grew up, it was beat into me to be humble.
Yeah.
There's a tweet said about someone, a college kid today, like, this kid hit a home run. That kid that hit the home run is retweeting that. In my day, you would be labeled a narcissistic prick.
Yeah. And
nowadays, if you don't retweet that, like, hey bro, you need to be retweeting that, you need to promote yourself.
I ran into a comic out of New York, and he was on America's Got Talent. His name is Usama. And you know, like, so I'm having different conversations with comics now, especially in Houston if they're from New York. And so he was telling me, and this is the world we live in order to play certain colleges, you got to have 40,000 Twitter followers. Like, you don't have to be funny, you just have to have 40,000 Twitter followers.
And that changes incentives. That incentivizes people to only chase followers. And
right.
You can buy followers.
Yeah.
I know somebody who's on Instagram who told me they bought 40,000 Instagram followers.
Give them my number, because I need 40,000. No, I'm only kidding.
Well, he says that he did it 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, before they would catch you doing it.
Yeah, and it's you know, to get to 10,000 followers, like my kids, they're on Instagram. They have their little string business on Instagram. They're always trying to get followers. It's all they're trying to do is just get followers. And I try to help them out as much as I can, but it doesn't convert into sales. But you're right. We're living in a world right now where it's just like, look at me, look at me, look at me. When I get bored, I scroll through my Facebook videos, right? And you just see like the high school kid or you know, hitting a home run. Like you were saying, he hit one home run and now he's a viral sensation. His batting average is .056, mm-hmm. but he's got 90,000 followers.
Unreal.
Yeah.
I hate it. Kevin Kelly said, all you need is 1,000 true fans. And the reason he said that is because to make a living, if you have 1,000 true fans and you sell a $100 product, that's how you make $100,000 a year, and that's a good living.
Right.
Well, I'd rather have like 50 true fans.
Yeah.
Like, give me 50 guys who really appreciate what I put out, and that's all I want. That's what I need.
Right. Sometimes I'll try to put content out, but I just don't. Like it's not that I don't want to. It's just like, it's a pain. It's a pain to go in and upload the video. It's a pain to sync everything up, and it's a pain to do this. And it's a full-time job. Like, you have to do it all the time.
If you're not famous already, in order to gain, let's say, 40,000 Twitter followers, you have to be on Twitter 9 hours a day.
Right. That's your full-time job.
Yeah. And there's a strategy to it. Like, you need to be commenting on popular people with blue checks. Like, you need to be commenting on their posts, and you need to do that regularly. You need to post every 2 hours. Like, you can't come up with three ideas and post them back to back to back. You got to spread them out. At the expense of the rest of your life.
It's algorithms.
Yes.
Right. Some people say I post too much, but like I'm having such a great experience in Houston. You know, just doing dumb stuff. Like, I'm going to an art show. I'm doing this. I'm going to a baseball game. Just normal, everyday stuff. I'll think of a joke on the way from a comedy club. That's my audience now, right? Like, that's my audience. I'll test the material out there. But you know what? There's some days where I'm just like, I have nothing to say. Yeah. I literally.
Well, you know what those people do who don't have anything to say?
Tell me.
They go back 3 years in Twitter, because there are all the advanced ways to search on Twitter.
Yeah.
And they find old tweets and just reword them.
Yeah.
And then
You know, you do the same thing with material, right? You rewrite old jokes. You go back and you go, okay, you know, this was a Trump joke. I can redo this for this president, Obama, whatever.
A lot of it's platitudes. A lot of those accounts, just empty platitudes all day, and they gain followers because people want to see that feel good stuff, you know?
Or people are bored.
Yeah.
Like life is boring. honestly, like, you get to a certain age. Brett, in a lot of ways, I'm like the most boring guy you'll ever meet.
What was it? Pascal said that man's biggest folly is his inability to sit quietly in a room by himself.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what meditation apps. The hardest part of starting a new city is the unknown, right? Because you've traveled, and there's stuff that's going to go wrong when you travel. Like, that's the ultimate guide to life, is how do you handle that?
Well, it's funny you're saying that, because people talk most about leaving their comfort zone, and they talk about their fear of failure. And I got to be honest, like, I can't relate to either one of those. Like, I can help somebody overcome those things, but I'm always out of my comfort zone. I never fear failure. Like, if I fail, I fail. I'm going to win or learn.
Brad, I'm moving to Miami. I'm the last person I ever expected to have lived in Brooklyn, Houston, and now Miami. Like, every single time, I'm like, what am I doing? Like, why am I going?
What is bringing you to Miami?
I got a new job.
Okay.
A software job. Right?
What is it, paying like 25% more?
Who knows? I
would like to know, because that's a big deal. You got a good place here.
I know, Brad. Trust me, I know.
I'm not asking how much you make. I'm asking, what would it take to get a guy like Harry living the life of Riley to move to Miami?
Brad, it doesn't take much. It really doesn't take much. You know what?
But your apartment there is going to cost what?
A little bit more.
That's it?
A lot more.
Okay.
but you know what? You know, here's where I see our similarities, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we don't have that conventional path.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you were a heavy hitter in software, and then you just said, I'm going to travel. somehow you made it work, right? And you can't plot that path.
Yeah.
Like you can't go, okay, I'm going to go to business school, then I'm going to Wharton, then I'm going to get my MBA, and, you know, I'm going to be a general manager here, and then I'm going to be a CRO, and then I'm going to own my own company. Like that's doctors, traditional path, yeah. Right? You know what they're getting into, right? Once they get out of medical school, it's a traditional path, right? Like I'm part artist, which is very non-traditional, and then I'm part like gypsy in my own, the way I live my life. Like I don't, if you look at my stuff, like I don't have a TV. I have one chair, two chairs and a couch. Like I'm a minimalist.
The artistry, I think, is in reinventing yourself, which you are constantly doing when you show up at a new place. You're allowed to do that, which is a beautiful
you
thing.
You have to change.
Yeah.
I'm not going to change Texas. I'm not going to change Idera. I'm not going to change the company I'm at.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to go to Brooklyn being the white guy. And everybody's going to be like, yeah, we want to be like you. No, it's just the opposite. Like, I have to learn to adapt. I have to learn to change. You know, I've had to learn I never had jerk chicken until I got to Brooklyn, right? I never had etouffee until I got here. Who knows what I'm going to find in Miami? And that's the exciting part to me. It's not – the job is a job, right? That's it's just a means to an end. What excites me about Miami is the adventure. It's the unknown.
Nah.
It's because I always seem to get into something, you know, like I always find the art festival, like I'm always involved in something that I never expected.
Well, do you feel like a weirdo? Because most people couldn't do that, because that is leaving your comfort zone. And people talk about fear of failure. You don't have any of that.
No, I do and I don't. Down here, because of COVID and because of whatever, the first club I got into was Phil and Derek's. It's a black owned comedy club. And they were the first ones to pay me, right? And then from there, I started meeting other comics. But there were times I'd be in Sunnyside, right? I don't belong in Sunnyside at all. And I'm literally the only white person in Sunnyside.
Mm.
But funny's funny, you know? And if I I've been around so many awkward situations in my life. I'm the fish out of water guy. Like that's the way I see myself. Like I moved here in 78. I'm constantly going to be the fish out of water.
You can adapt to pretty much any situation.
Yeah. It
probably makes you a great improv guy.
That's where I thrive.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the written stuff.
Yeah.
It's when I go into the crowd and I'm just like, what do you do? And I just start going off on them, you know, and people are just laughing,
yeah.
You know, or even on a sales call.
Well, sales is so much storytelling. I don't know why it's not taught that way. It seems like every company you go to work for, the first day of training should be sales is reference selling. You're going to be telling the story of customers who have had success with our product. You need to be able to tell a good story.
One of the best books I read this year was Sales Differentiators, right? And every sales call starts off the same. Hi, I'm Harry from Idera. We've got the best of breed SQL Server products. And the next company goes, oh, we've got the best of breed, whatever. What this book taught was, what are your differentiators personally? What are your differentiators as a company? What are the differentiators as a product? Once you start breaking it down, like, you know, you came from Louisiana. You played college baseball. You've traveled overseas. That's a big differentiator. That's a huge differentiator.
It is. It allows you to relate to more people. And
yeah.
What you're trying to do is find common ground as quickly as possible.
And I'm sure in all your travels, like your perception of everything has changed. You know, if I were to talk to you at Idera, you know, you'd probably have a certain mindset. As you expand and you travel, you know, you just got back from Mexico. You're just about to go to Prague or Colombia or wherever. You don't even know where you're going.
I don't know where I'm going yet.
All right, guys, where should Brad go? Post it in the comments, man. I think you should go to Boston, but I'm partial.
You're biased.
I'm biased, but you know, seriously, how has that changed your view on the world?
Well, people told me that my view on the world would change, but it changed in ways that they couldn't have predicted and I couldn't have predicted.
Right.
Where should I start? I mean, I have a thousand things that I notice now that I didn't before.
Pick what's the one thing that's like, if you were to talk to Idea or Brad, right now?
Be grateful. Life is brief. Be grateful. You don't realize how lucky you are to live in America.
That's why I can embrace going to Miami. That's why I can come back to Houston and be like, I have a loft style apartment. Right, I don't care about the everything. Everything I have can be taken away from me, and it has, one way or another. Your job, your health, your marriage. This is nothing. This is nothing. I came here with nothing. And I get it. But every single time I'm in Houston, or wherever, like I've been to North Dakota, I've been to the states that nobody else goes to because I had a job that allowed me to travel. And I always found something about it that I was like, wow, I got to go to North Dakota for free. Mm. I got to go to South Dakota for free. I got to go to New York City or wherever, right?
It's attitude.
Yeah, I'm not staying at the Ritz. I'm staying, usually it's a Best Western.
Yeah.
But it's the experience. It's the experience of being alive. You know, it's the hero's journey. It's like, oh my God, like I'm in North Dakota. What do people do here? Like, what's the hot spots? Like, where can I eat that I've never eaten?
Yeah, that gratitude is huge. I think, have you been through AA or any of those?
I did. Al-Anon.
I'm not familiar.
It's for partners of alcoholics.
Okay, so from what I understand, even in those programs, they have people write down what they're grateful for every day.
Right.
It's so huge.
Well, huge. Have you ever done The Artist's Way? Have you ever heard of the book The Artist's Way?
Julia Cameron.
Yeah. So I still journal every single day.
Good for you.
I try to journal.
Too. I try.
Yeah, you try, day. Right? But it forces you to be grateful, right? And you could tell, like when I was mentioning the 9-year downward spiral in Boston, I was a miserable person. I didn't know I was a miserable person. I knew I needed to get better. And then I got to Houston. If you were to talk to Harry, who you met at the gym, to the guy that's sitting here now, I'm a whole different person. Mm. Like the core of me is still the same, but my views on Houston are like, it's a great city. Uh-huh. You know, New York was a great city for me. You know, it forced me to grow up. It forced me to learn. It forced me to get out of my comfort zone. You know, like I've done things like I would never do.
Perspective. Attitude, gratitude. Some people just need the tools.
Right.
But the problem is a lot of this stuff is so easy to do and it's easy not to do. And so they're not going to journal. They're not going to write down what they're grateful for.
Right.
And so they end up in a bad spot. But to be a quote-unquote success, in my mind, it's very simple things. It's being grateful for what you have. Compare yourself to yourself, nobody else. I mean,
absolutely.
People need these tools, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
The stuff we should be teaching in schools, probably, but they want us out in the world competing and raising the standard of living for everybody.
Yeah.
That's something else that you learn traveling the world is, well, what's different about America? Oh, the Protestant work ethic that has us stressed out at 11:30 over an email from our boss when all we're really doing is getting money to make our $650 car payment that we don't need.
Right. Yeah. I've simplified, you know, I drive a crappy little Nissan Sentra that I love. Even now I'm like, what can I get rid of? Like as I'm moving, I'm like, do I really need that? One of the best things I did was going down to Goodwill. And just getting rid of that stuff, but knowing that somebody else needs it more than I do. I look at this oven, and I'm going to give it to Goodwill, this convection oven. I'm going to give it to Goodwill. And it's going to get more use and better use from somebody here than from me.
My wife just went to Goodwill and bought two really cute outfits for my daughter. And she wanted me to guess how much. And I knew the number was going to be low, so I said $13. And
$8.
Goes, eight. That's exactly $8. What she said.
Everything's $8 at Goodwill. Everything's. But you know what? That's. You know, like when I was making money, you know, and living in Houston the first time, it's like I would never go to Goodwill, like never. It's a pride thing, you know. Yeah. I'm too good for Goodwill. Yeah. You know, like I'm going to go to Marshall's or wherever, or Berghoff Goodman or Macy's or whatever.
I had this thought at Tom Adovasio's house. I was sitting in his backyard with him, and we were watching the boats go by. He lives on the canal.
Yeah.
He did at one time. Beautiful place on Clear, it's right near Clear Lake.
Yeah.
And he was telling me about all his neighbors. Like, this guy, they divorced last year.
Yeah.
This guy, he got addicted and he's in AA now. And I'm like, these people aren't any happier in these million-dollar houses.
No.
If they were, I'd be working right now. Like, there's no doubt about it. If I thought that a $5 million house made me 1 ounce happier than I am today, I'm working toward that $5 million house.
Most of the people that I've seen, you know, with that lifestyle, and like I said, this is plenty for me, right? Like, I don't need... Yeah, this is plenty for me, you know, but you get trapped into that mindset. Like, oh, if I just make $2.3 million and I have a $4 million house, I'm going to be happier. If my kids go to a Montessori program, you know, they're going to be happier. It's not that way at all. Like, some of the best times I've had, I had nothing. I was selling tires, telling jokes. We'd get on a three or four of us, starving artists, and we just went out and had fun, and we didn't have a dollar to our names. And the more money you make, you know, the more money you make, the more pressure there is to keep up. And that's part of what I like about moving is I don't have that pressure.
More money, more problems.
Yeah, biggie.
And once they make it, they're like, oh, remember those road trips, you know, when we were starving and we'd eat out of garbage cans?
Yeah,
not literally.
I, you know,
but.
Yeah, but I mean... And that's what I love about the comedy scene. Like, I'm a mentor now. Like, I'm a mentor at work. I'm a mentor with the guys that do comedy. All I do is just encourage people. That's
beautiful.
No, it's amazing. Somebody will be like, I'm only selling phones at T-Mobile, but I'm telling jokes at night. I go, that's exactly where you're supposed to be. That is exactly where you're supposed to be. You know, I got a friend of mine, comic guy, really funny kid. He's crashing on a couch two doors down. My buddy Marlo. One of the first comics I met down here, little guy, black guy, we're tight. I'm like, you got a place to crash in Miami. We're tight. He's like, I'm Uber eating it. I'm like, that's exactly where you're supposed to be. I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be. You're exactly where you're supposed to be.
Okay, we're 46 minutes into this podcast, and from here on out, I'll be angling for a place to crash in Miami.
You're in. You're in. You're, let's go. You're in. I got a couch. Look, see if you can fit. You know, I'll get an Airbnb. Your kids can, your daughter can sleep on my bed. She's got a thing, a blankie, and I got her a monkey.
Oh, yes, Harry got her a monkey. And what Harry doesn't know is my daughter's first sounds were hoo hoo ha ha.
That
monkey.
Is awesome.
Yes,
that
you
is
didn't
awesome.
Know that. When
no,
you got
I didn't know that.
That.
Brad, I saw you 2 years ago at
That's
a gym,
awesome.
And I was
awesome.
Like, I got to keep up with this guy. And I do. I keep up with your travels. It's amazing how life works. It really
Isn't
is.
It? How old are you, Harry?
52. I'm going to get a fake ID when I go to Miami so I can get into the clubs that says I'm 23, like a McLovin type deal. So
you can pull that off.
Yeah.
Do you have a best friend?
Yeah, I do. I've known this guy since fourth grade. We played soccer together. We were on the purple team, and we won the championship. His name is Nick Delvecchio. He was number one player in baseball in Massachusetts. He went to Harvard, got drafted by the Yankees. He came up with Derek Jeter. Like, if you read Derek Jeter's book, he's in Derek Jeter's book. He's, you know, Gangster Fred. Chris Heffernan, believe it or not, he's a mess.
You have a lot of close
I got a tight circle, just like you. You have a tight circle.
Well, I wonder, our dads don't have a lot of friends. Do you think it's social media that's enabled us to have a lot of friends?
I think our dads had a different view on life.
You want to hear what my dad's doing right now?
He Please.
Retired and took a job at a pool supply store making $12 an hour to keep himself busy.
I don't know why there's a mandatory retirement age. Those are the people that go nuts.
I'm like, well, I've tried to talk him into starting this business and that business, but he was an accountant, and he's used to working for the man.
My dad,
and so he's still working for the man.
My dad was an accountant.
Yeah.
He died when I was 28, which is part of the reason I moved to New York. But yeah, I mean, it was the American dream. You know, the 2.3 kids, car in the yard, all that sort of stuff. Our lives are different. You know, like when I went to college, and I was like, I'm going to be a writer. I studied creative writing. My dad was like, how are you going to make a living at that? somehow I've made it. It's probably the same with you. Like, you know, oh, Dad, I'm going to quit and I'm going to travel and I'm going to have a podcast. And your dad probably sat you down. Hey, what are you doing? What are you doing?
No, I think his words were, what are you running from?
What I would tell you is, what are you running to?
I know.
But it's a non-conventional life, and you've made it work. I don't fit in one of these boxes in corporate America. I just don't. I've never have. I never will. That's not my life. Like, my life is everything outside of the 9-to-5.
Yeah, I asked my dad to do something the other day. It was at lunchtime. What was it? Oh, I wanted him to come look at a baseball facility that we were considering investing in, and he couldn't make it because he had to work like a 10-to-2 that day. And I said, well, ask Master if he'll let you have a lunch break and come look at this property with me.
Oh, that's hysterical.
I mean, come on.
That's his. Oh, my God. He's like, no, I got to work from 10 to 2. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, your dad's probably feels productive and he's happy, right?
He is,
You know, and he doesn't understand.
It's interacting with people.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's a lot. Yeah,
kudos to my dad. Yeah.
You know,
I'm not knocking.
There was a guy that I used to, when I was growing up, I worked at a gas station and he was retired. And he would literally make himself projects for the day, but they were stupid. Like, oh, can you tighten the lug nuts on my car? I'm polishing my car. I got a busy day. I'm polishing my car. I get why people work like the $12 an hour pool job. Like Charles Pendarvis, I ran into him at Hertz. Mm-hmm. I was renting a car at Hertz. Dude, he is the best guy you will ever meet.
Mm-hmm.
Hands down, the best guy you'll ever meet.
Yep, big fan.
Oh, huge fan. Like, if you don't like Charles Pendarvis, you don't like people,
yep,
right?
That's true.
And so I ran into him. He just retired, like full-time retired. And I'm like, Charles, get back in the software game. I need you. And he's like, no. I'm like, you don't have no cold call, no 250 list, no nothing. He's like, no. But, you know, he's just one of those guys that was just, like, if you want to talk about work ethic, that's the work ethic.
Yeah. My dad has it, too. That's where I learned it.
Yeah, that's where I learned it, too. Yeah. What was your first job? How
Burger
old are you?
King. I lied about my age so that I could get the job.
Yeah.
$4.60 an hour.
Amazing. And then what did you do in high school?
Played baseball and worked at Burger King.
Okay. And then college?
College, I worked. My girlfriend at the time's dad had a company called Pumps of Houston. So, like, Christmas break, summer break, I would do some – I'd grab the wrench and put it in the doo-doo water, water, and pull the wrench out, and there'd be feces on the wrench. It was nasty. So
yeah.
I did some of that. I did a little lifeguarding. That was probably the easiest job I did. I dug some ditches, some trenches, so that houses could be sprayed for termites and things like that.
Okay.
In August, that was really hard work.
Jesus.
So I've had some odd jobs, but they all made me who I am.
That's same with me. Like, I worked at a gas station. I worked
busboy.
Yeah. Same. You know, you learn what you don't want to do in life.
Yeah. That's for sure.
Like, literally, like, you know, like, people complain to me about software sales. Oh, I got a cold call. I got to deal with an angry customer.
Yeah.
I'm like, the worst injury that I've ever gotten in my job, I had a paper cut. You know, I had a sprained wrist or, you know, something stupid.
I can remember hearing people complain about that job that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And one time I broke it down for them for what they get paid per phone call that they make.
Right.
So they're required to make like 45 or 50 calls a day or whatever.
Yeah.
And I said, how much did you make last year? Oh, $108,000. Okay, let's do the math. You made $13.75 per time you picked up the phone.
Per time.
And you didn't even have to pick up the phone. You wore a headset and pressed a button.
Right. Right.
You going to complain?
Yeah. First world problems, third world problems, and our problems. Software sales problems,
yes,
right?
Those people are not waking up every day grateful.
No, and that's you know, when you have that blue collar, you know, when you're digging ditches, when you're working at a gas station, when you're putting your hand in muck, and then you get to an idea or you get to a software sales job, and you're like, I can have snacks? You know, I get paid cash? You know, like, they're going to give us free food?
Yeah.
You know?
I don't even have to pay for my health care.
Right. Yeah.
They paid all of our health care.
Yeah,
there.
They paid all of our health care, you know, like, I mean, the, you know, Christmas parties.
Bring your dog to work, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, Christmas parties, you know, at the gas station, we went out to Pizzeria Uno once a year. you know, and we got two or three pizzas, and that was our Christmas party. And I was grateful back then. I'm still grateful back then.
At the Red House, they had a Starbucks less than two blocks away.
Right.
You could go walk to Starbucks anytime.
We all did it, like in packs. In packs. We were like packs going to Starbucks, you know. And then we'd come back, and we'd finish up at 5 o'clock, and somebody would have a happy hour. Like, it was a very social event.
You had this girl on Facebook you posted quite a few pics with. Did that just fall apart?
Yeah, it fell apart January. So mm-hmm. we talked about sales and
April.
Yeah, okay. And she's a great girl, fantastic, but we just wanted different things. I want city life. Like, I want to be not necessarily doing everything that the city has to offer, but I want to be in the center of things. She wanted the 2.5 kids and the house in the suburbs and all that stuff. And it's like, I don't want to drive to Starbucks. I want to walk to one of these like little independent coffee houses and enjoy city life. And we just drifted apart, and you know, we still talk, and she's a really nice person. Wish her all the luck, but I think I'm ready for a new start. The past 2 years in Houston, what it's taught me was I can make it. You know, like I needed to make it on my own again, and that's what it's taught me. And with all the ups and downs and stuff that life has to throw at you, and life throws a lot of curves. It throws a lot of curves.
Was it hard?
I was ready for it. You know, so one of the things, it was interesting enough because one of the things I realized, in a lot of ways, I was dating my ex-wife.
Oh, Jesus.
And that didn't turn out good. And that's where the therapy helped, right? And the therapist said to me, he goes, because when you're in it, it's like being in a painting. Like, you can't see the forest from the trees. But when you have that third-party objective view, and they're like, she's going to do more damage to you than your first wife did, then you go, oh, okay. I tell people, like, I have a horseshoe in my ass. I'm the luckiest guy I know in a lot of cases, and it's inadvertent. Like, it's just inadvertent. And this was one of those lucky breaks. It was the universe telling me, like, she's not the right person for you. And now I'm like, okay, great.
How long did you date her?
A year. Like, pretty much a year.
It's a good time to know whether or not to cut bait or...
Yeah, I thought it was great. And she was, like I said, she's... Five kids, you know.
She had five kids?
Yeah, she had five kids.
How many do you have?
Three.
Holy shit.
So my oldest is, and this is going to shock you, Brad.
Yeah, she was born
Francis when I was at Idera, when I had the house in the Heights, when we worked together. She is going to be a freshman in high school. She's getting all A's, and she's a theater major. Like, she does theater. The twins are going to be in eighth grade. They have... You can find them on Strings by PNF on Instagram. Follow them. Don't follow me. Follow them. They're doing some pretty cool things as far as marketing for somebody that's never had a marketing department. It's all self-done. And so they play soccer. They're all getting straight A's. You know, they're really good kids. They're really, really good kids. But I miss them.
So their mom lives in Houston?
Their mom lives in Boston.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah. It was, it's probably the best. That's part of a big reason why I needed to get out of there. It was the environment was so toxic for me post-divorce that I was just reacting like I was in a pinball machine. Just everything was just reactive, and I couldn't dig myself out of it. Right?
And that's the only time you've been married?
Yeah.
How long were you married?
5 years.
5 years. Damn, yeah. Y'all produced three kids in 5 years.
I was good. That was very efficient. I was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was just, you know, but like I said, like when I look at Houston, like we had the trappings of success, right? We had a house in the Heights. The kids were going to school in a Montessori program. I had more money in the bank than I've ever had in my life. Like, I was making really good money both at Idea and Semantic. And, you know, we weren't happy. Or I was happy or happy-ish, but my ex-wife wasn't happy, and I don't think she's ever going to be happy. I look at my life now, I don't have as much physically as far as possessions, but I'm appreciative of what I have, you know, and it's right now it's more about the experiences. Like, it's about the experience of going to rodeo and just, you know, like rodeo for me this year was fantastic. Like it was.
I'm sorry to interject. Did she expect you to make her happy?
I don't know. That's a great question. You know, if somebody's not happy, and there were signs and I ignored them, like I just ignored them. You know,
you
like,
didn't have that objective voice.
No, I didn't have. I wish I had my. I blame my therapist that I had now. I just at the time I was 36. I was ready to settle down. I wanted to get married. I thought I found the right person. It all looked good, and then things just changed, right? Like it just there was a lot of stuff going on. I don't think she was happy. I think she had some depression. I was working a lot. Like that's my addiction. If I had to say what my addiction is, it's work. Like I'm a worker. There have been times when I'm like, you know, when I was living with Amanda, I'm like, hey, can you get me a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? I'm 4 feet away. But I was that busy. Like, yeah. I was on call after call after call. Mm. I've now learned, like, okay, you gotta take a break. You gotta work on yourself. You gotta take a walk. I'm sure you're the same way. When you get into something, you don't stop.
You're absolutely right. And my wife will ask, did you get in the zone or something?
Yeah.
I'll come to bed 4 hours later than anticipated.
Right.
And I do. I just get in the zone. I get in that flow state. And there's a great book written by this guy with a Polish name.
Mikhail Tchaikovsky. Yeah,
there
Flow. One of the best books ever written. One of the best.
Yes. I couldn't put it down.
Oh, my God.
And
it changed
so
my life.
And it so described me. I'm like, yes, I need flow state.
Right. That's the optimal state.
I got to piss again.
Yeah, don't worry about it, man. Yeah, but that's the flow state. That's where you want to be as an athlete. That's where you want to be as a salesperson, just in that optimal state. I remember reading that book, and it was a great book. And that's what happens. Like I get in that flow state, I don't leave the corner, and then I realize I got to eat. I got to. And Joseph Campbell, The Power of Myth, and a few other books that I've read have really. Have you ever read Joseph Campbell and The Power of Myth? Have you read that book?
I've stayed away from Joseph Campbell because he wrote The Hero's Journey, right?
Yeah.
I found him over my head. Like I needed to focus too much and I had to be in a mood. And there's certain authors that I go to when I'm in that mood, and that is like Nassim Taleb.
Okay, I've never read him.
Okay. So he wrote Anti-Fragile.
Never
he
read
wrote
that.
Fooled by Randomness.
Okay.
Basically, The Inferno. He has a collection of four books. But yeah, there Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules for Life. Like, I have to be in a certain mood to read certain books.
Right.
And A Hero's Journey and those Joseph Campbell books, he hasn't made my list of when I'm in that mood to really get into something. Because a lot of those paragraphs I'm reading two and three times.
But, oh, absolutely.
Okay.
So yeah, no. Yeah, absolutely. The Power of Myth is a conversation that he and Bill Moyers had, and it's simpler, like it's more digestible.
Okay.
But one of the things it talks about, he brings in Star Wars, right? And he talks about the hero's journey, and Star Wars is pretty basic, but you know, he ties it in with Odysseus and the Greeks. But Star Wars is you know, Luke Skywalker going on this hero's journey and discovering himself, and it's always resonated with me. You know, I'm on my hero's journey. Like I'm Odysseus, you know, far away from everything and growing and just trying to grow and trying to, you know, come up with it and trying to figure out what's working for me and what's not working for me. And it's once I adopted, you got to feed your head like you feed your mind, like you feed your body with exercise and things like that. It sounds like you and I probably read a lot of the same authors or read a lot of the same stuff. And that's what a lot of people stop, right?
A lot of people don't read. Nobody's reading anymore.
Yeah.
We stayed in a rectangular condo complex in Playa del Carmen.
Tell me
and
about
at
it.
10 p.m., you can see into everybody's window.
Yeah.
And everybody is on their phone. Not one person has a book.
Right.
And I said to my wife, I said, how does that look 10 years from now? The compounding effect of looking at Snapchat and scrolling Instagram every night for the next 10 years. I think what's going to happen is you're going to have this massive inequality, not just materially speaking, but intelligence-wise. Because people who grab a book and then another book and then another book are going to have the compound knowledge.
Yes.
And the dummies are just going to have the Instagram filters. And
right,
then the
right.
Hashtags
yes. People are amazed. I haven't had a TV in 2 years.
That's great.
I mean, I watch something TV. I watch something on Netflix on my computer, but I don't want a TV.
I won't even watch Netflix. My wife kind of doesn't like me for that. If there was a man that wants to steal my wife, just like walk up to her in the street and say, I would love to just watch Netflix
and chill. Netflix and chill. And that's okay, man. Like that's, you know, that, but I didn't come to Houston to watch TV. I came to Houston to live. I came to Houston to do comedy. I came to Houston to go to the rodeo. I came to Houston to go to art festivals. I came to Houston to, you know, go to barbecues and just stuff. Like I didn't, yeah. I'm not going to Miami to watch, you know, TV. Like I can do that everywhere. Like I don't want to do that. I want to.
What's that show that everybody's seen? So I've been to like Scotland and they'll say, okay, this is where this was filmed.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What's that show?
Lord of the.
No, it's relatively new, maybe 3 years old, 4 years old. They had a new one, Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones.
I've
yes.
never seen it. I've never seen
Game of Thrones.
I've never seen Yellowstone.
I've never seen that.
Anybody talks about. Brett, how do we have friends?
You know? People are like, one of my ex-girlfriends, Tracy, was a teacher, and she's really like a friend now. I consider her a friend, and she's like, read a newspaper, right? Like, because I stay away from media. Like, it's just. I get depressed about, you know, the Chechens or whatever,
yeah.
You know, or oh my God, you know, but she's right. Like,
well, the Russian guest I had a few weeks ago, she said she hasn't looked at media in 15 years. And I said, why is that? And she said, well, because I care about my mental health.
Right. Right.
Right on.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's so many things like, you know, you get into these conversations and they're like, well, what about the penguins in Antarctica? Okay. Well, what about the penguins and stuff? Yeah. I'm like, should I know about this stuff? Like,
no.
90% of life that's in the news doesn't affect me.
It does not.
Even the weather.
Well, maybe that's why people can't talk to each other anymore. They don't know what to talk about.
Like, Tracy was the best girlfriend I ever had. And as I'm looking for a partner, I look at Tracy. She was a teacher. Like, you got to have intellectual curiosity.
A must.
You know, you got to read something. You know?
Something. Yes.
Yeah, something. She was beautiful. She was kind. But the main thing is, like, we could talk on the phone for hours. Other people, it's like pulling teeth.
Well, I'm so glad you said that, because when I was dating prior to meeting my wife, I didn't even talk on the phone with girls. And when I did, they would talk for 15 minutes and then, like, okay, your turn.
Yeah.
That's not how conversation works.
No.
Like, they don't know that. They don't know any better.
There's a back and forth.
Right. It's right. A dance.
Right. Exactly. You know, even now, like, I'm on Tinder. I'll give you one of my jokes from my you know, I think my Tinder's broken. Because every time I swipe right and the girl swipes right, she looks just like me. So that's from the act. You can catch it somewhere at some point. I don't know where it's going to be, but that's in there. I need to have that stimulation, not just a physical stimulation, but like, what are you passionate about? Like, what are you passionate? Like, you're passionate about traveling,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you light up. You're like, I'm going to Chechnya. I'm going to Prague. I'm going to India. I'm going here. And I'm like, wow. Like, but every time you come back, you're like, and I saw this, and I saw that, and I ate this, and we took a rickshaw, and we
bungee jumped in Australia.
Yeah, yeah, you know, like, I'm passionate about the arts, like the experience of being alive, like, you know, just the fish out of water, the hero. Yeah, that's it, you know, and
can't explain it.
And just like in Houston, like my best friends in comedy break down into two sets. There's the set that's younger than me. Like guys like Marlo and Enrique Chacon and they're just amazing guys. Like, they're just genuinely funny people, super nice guys, you know, not a mean bone in their body, just unbelievably talented. And then there's the guys that are my age, right? So I took a bunch of guys that are my age to a Texans game, and I was the only white guy. I had no problems with it. They had no problems with it. And we had a great time. Like, we just, you know, they were like, thank you so much. Tickets were $25.
Wow.
But it's the experience of being, doing something for somebody else. But, you know, my buddy Cliff, he said, you know, and he was living in tents back in the day. He was addicted to crack. He got shot at. When you talk to somebody else and you hear their story, you're like, oh, my God. One of the things that he was saying, he's like, yeah, the biggest high I get is making people laugh.
Oh.
It's a rush.
Oh, God, yeah. I can't imagine making a room. Well, I've done it once in my life. But
where was it? It was a
it was
wedding.
An Idera conference. They had 500 people there.
Yeah.
And I had to speak about the product. And I have always known that whenever you give a talk, you start with something funny.
Right.
It humanizes you.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
Tension
yeah.
in the room. And I said something about, I'm Brad D'Antonio. You probably recognize me from your caller ID. And it took a half a second because it has to carry from the mic to the back of the room. And that gap was like my stomach, like butterfly.
It
like
just
dropped.
It dropped.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, that bombed. And then I heard this roar, and it sounds like a roar.
It does. Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, it was the best feeling in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, I got to try comedy.
I can get you up. I might not be able to get you down, but I can get you up, man.
Well, I might take you up on that.
Yeah. And
there's a 50-50 chance I'm taking you up on that because I would love it.
I need to
start finding material.
When I started traveling.
But it's everywhere, right?
That's the thing. When I started traveling for Kaspersky, like I'd go to Montana, I'd go to North Dakota, South Dakota. I had so much downtime at night, I'd find an open mic night. So I'd literally just show up to some saloon, and I'd just start telling jokes, you know, and it was fantastic. It was unbelievable.
So you can tell a joke on the spot?
I've done so much of it, yeah. You know, how many at-bats have you taken in your life?
At-bats?
At-bats.
Let's say 300 a year.
You've seen a lot of pitches, right?
Yeah.
So you know when a pitcher goes into a windup, and he's going to do something from the arm angle, from the spin. You recognize it. I've taken maybe 300 at-bats in my life. Again, going from like, now if you started off from Little League, right?
Yeah.
So you know 3-2 pitch, what the tips are. You recognize certain situations. It's the same thing. The more I get up, I recognize certain situations. I can go into a crowd and I can see a guy body on, you know, uncomfortable. That's the guy I want to talk to.
Mm.
That's the guy I want to talk to. In a sales call, I had a guy, he had as his Zoom saver, he had the guy from Office Space, one of the guys from Office Space. Nobody addressed that on that call.
Mm.
And I addressed it on the call. And that changed the dynamics of the call because instantly he felt, okay, this guy understands me. This guy knows me.
Yeah.
You know, like this guy gets it.
Yeah.
And it changed so much on that call that it just made it easier. But nobody's got the balls to address any of that stuff.
And a lot of it is balls. And it's weird. We don't think of it as balls. It's like I had this conversation with my best friend. Like, do you consider yourself a disciplined person? And he was like, no. Once you discipline yourself over the course of 20 years, you just are who you are. Like, you don't think I have to discipline myself
right.
to go to the gym.
Right.
And it's the same thing with having balls. Like, I don't think of myself as having balls. I remember asking a girl that I took on a date one time, like, what'd you think when I asked you out? And she was like, oh, this guy's got balls. And I thought, who do you think you are?
Right, like, right. I'm more comfortable in front of 50 people in a mic than I am on a first date with somebody that doesn't talk.
Mm.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, like you have to pull the conversation out of them. And you're like, you know, what books have you read? Good. You know, like, what is that? Like, what is that? You know? What do you think of Game of Thrones? Oh, well, I don't own a TV. you know, I don't know what to tell you. I just don't.
Yeah.
You know, or, like, what are you looking for? A good relationship. You know, and you're literally counting the minutes until the date ends.
Uh-huh.
I call the audible. Oh, look, it's 1:45. I've got
so
that. Yeah, yeah.
She must be a hard six then.
Doesn't matter.
No.
You know what? Here's the thing that I, you know, like when I was young, I want the hot chick. And then as I get older, I'm like, do I want to get stuck with the hot chick?
Mm.
Do I want to wake up every day and not be able to have a conversation?
Mm.
Do I want to wake up and not have that fire in my belly to be like, okay, I want to be a better person, you know, or do I just want to be stuck in some loveless marriage?
Well, I think you want someone who inspires you.
That's what I'm looking for. That's exactly what I'm looking for.
And it does take a certain level of beauty and preservation, taking care of yourself.
Right.
My wife wakes up and puts makeup on every day. And I love that about her.
I have a Netflix account, and I can travel. Tell her that.
You motherfucker. Gonna kill my wife. Anything, I said this on the last episode, anything that comes between me and my family gets destroyed. You didn't listen to that one.
No. Okay. Well, Brad, and you're putting yourself out there, right? Yeah. You know, you're putting yourself out there. And it's amazing, like, you know, there'll be people on Facebook that I'll run into 5 or 6 years, you know, or whatever, and they're like, what happened to this? Like, I'll give you for example. I was traveling to South Dakota, and I was going through Chicago. Somehow my luggage got lost. I had business meetings. I had to go to Walmart and buy clothes, right? I made a joke of my having my luggage lost. And you're like, oh, my luggage is having a great time in Chicago. It's a baseball game. It's at the museum, all that sort of stuff. Didn't think anything of it. Nobody pays attention to my posts, right? I go to my business meeting. There's a tag from Walmart hanging out. I'm laughing. The guy's laughing. We're laughing. We get back, all that sort of stuff. The next year, I go to my high school reunion. And James Baker, who's one of my friends, grabs his wife, right, who I've never met, and goes, this is the guy I was telling you about who lost his luggage in Chicago. He goes, I was dying laughing at that. And I'm
that
like,
was how long after?
A year or two.
That's great.
You know, but you never know. Like, I don't know who's going to be listening to this. And you don't know what the reaction is going to be.
Yeah. I was at a red light on the way here and got an Instagram DM from my cousin. This is my favorite cousin in the world.
Yeah.
He said, your comment on that last solo episode where you talked about Russia doing empire building, he was like, yeah, I didn't know about that. And I'm like, what do you mean? And he said, well, just, I don't know if the context or something, but it rubbed him the wrong way. And I'm like, what? It just didn't make sense to me. All I was trying to convey was that, is Russia going to be content if they take over Ukraine? Are they going to sit on their hands?
Right.
Or do the lessons of history teach us that they're then going to go after Lithuania or Latvia?
Right.
You know,
Poland. Yeah.
Poland, oh, wherever.
Poland's right next door.
Hungary,
yeah.
Czech. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he took that as me being on the side of Russia doing some empire building. And so that's one person who knows me pretty well. Think about all the other hundreds or thousands of people out there listening who
don't
know me.
Time out.
Yeah.
So you're not in favor of Russia. I just want to make sure we get that clear.
I'm not in favor of them invading Ukraine, no.
Thank you. So anybody that's pro-Ukraine or pro-Russia invading...
Well, the girl I just had on the podcast has a Ukrainian surname and Russians in Ukraine and is pro-Putin.
Yeah, there's always going to be somebody, right? There's always going to be somebody that's pro-Putin. There's always going to be somebody that has a different opinion than you. And the only thing that you could say is, that's okay.
Do you know that I probably told you this. My account, Facebook and Instagram, I was blocked for a month prior to the 2020 election from posting anything.
Really?
Well, the big tech companies couldn't risk literally Hitler getting another 4 years. So they blocked me.
Yeah.
Well, do you know that now that I've had this girl on my podcast and posted about it, today I posted, or this was maybe last night, I posted my daughter stirring coffee at a restaurant, and it had a warning notice on it and said, this content has been blocked in certain countries. Click here to view which countries. And I click it,
Jesus.
And it says Russia.
Oh, yeah.
Blocked in Russia, a video of my daughter.
That is so crazy.
Yes.
Like, you know, because I think, as an artist or as somebody that grew up believing in free speech, like, it's the ultimate thing. You know, like,
for us Westerners, yes.
Yeah.
But, I mean, people who live through the USSR, they don't know free speech.
Right, but even, and I don't want to get into the conspiracy rabbit holes, right? But
I'm all for it.
Yeah, is our speech really free?
Now?
Yeah, do you think?
No,
yeah.
Because you told me before we started that you can't say the things that I say because you're still in the tech world.
Right.
So but that means your speech ain't free.
Absolutely. Brad, 100%. And I also have kids, and I also have a very contentious ex-wife who could use whatever I say against me in a court of law.
I didn't think of that.
So I've got to, you know, even I told a joke on stage the other day, and I didn't think it was racist, but when I told it, it was, right?
Tell me the joke.
My buddy Marlo, who
black guy comedy.
Black guy comedy, really nice kid. I joke with him, like, I want to adopt him. He's like a 30-year-old guy. I'm going to Miami. I want to adopt you. Just joking around. I laugh every single time I say it. He laughs every single time. I said it on stage. The next comic, Trey Tunston, who I'm friends with, and he's very, very fun. He's like jokingly around, insinuated that. And I even passed that. I tried to pass a hat to get a donation so that I could adopt Marlo. I wasn't gonna take the money, right? Mm-hmm. It was different strokes.
Different strokes for different hands. I say it all the time. But what did he say? He came on stage and said, Harry, that was a racist
joke? I talked when I realized it was racist. The first thing I did.
What was racist about it? You wanting to adopt someone who has a dark skin tone?
It was 30 years old. I could see. My point of view has changed.
I don't understand what's racist about it.
It implies slavery.
Oh, you're owning him? You're not adopting
him? Right.
Oh, adoption is equated to ownership, which could be slavery.
Right, it could be. And now
fuck out of here.
Yeah,
who is this guy? Yeah,
he's my buddy.
Okay,
right?
Okay,
you know,
sorry.
But when I, you know, like, and I had a conversation with him yesterday. Like, the old me would have been like, fuck you. Like, screw you. I'm the least woke person you'll ever meet, but I can see somebody else's point of view.
Well, how old was this person who said that's a racist joke? Because that matters.
30.
Okay, so my wife is in her late 20s. Her friends would have said the same thing.
Right.
Everything is racist to them.
Everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
And that's just...
It's cancel culture.
It's cancel culture. It's
toxic.
Woke to the nth degree.
Yeah.
It's crazy what I hear her relatives say is racist, but you know they're between the ages of 20 and 30, so everything is racist.
I've had my buddy,
like when the George Floyd thing happened.
Yeah.
My buddies who coach, we talked about it,
yeah.
And I'm like, hey, how are you handling this with your team?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, you know, I had to think, do I have any black guys on my team?
Right.
And that's how I am. It's like, do I have any black friends that I need to reach out to and see if they're okay?
Right.
Because, like, you don't even think about your friends as being white or black. They're just friends. They're just players on your team.
That's the difference. Like, Gangster Fred and I don't see him as black. He doesn't see me as white.
No.
Like, we've known each other for such a long time that when I go to the comedy clubs and even, you know, with the older guys that I hang out with Al and Cliff, and, like, I don't see color.
I have a biracial daughter. What happens there? Like, does she get all these benefits that are being doled out?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Her skin tone is closer to mine than my wife.
Right, right.
Is she going to get all the benefits?
Who knows?
Of a Hispanic? It's
ridiculous. But that's, you know, like, I had friends, you know, like when I lived down here and something would happen in Houston, you know, the news, right? I'm oblivious to 90% of what happens, literally. Oh, there was a shooting somewhere in Texas. Are you okay? Yeah, I'm okay. yeah, I'm fine. But I see their point. I can see why they're calling. I could see how that might have been offensive to somebody, right? Like, it's not... And I didn't. It wasn't meant out of malice at all, but I could see why it was taken that way. And so, it's one.
It takes a little bit of work. Is that person? I know he's a buddy of yours, but is he someone who prides himself on being somewhat intellectual? Because it is kind of a stretch to
the crowd didn't react the way I want to. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So, you know, like...
You think they were thinking, oh, that's racist?
I put them in an uncomfortable position, and I've done that before, okay. Right? You know, because I'm like, yeah, I don't know what's going to work. Like, sometimes I just go off the cuff. I'm just like, whatever I'm feeling.
Yeah.
And sometimes it works, and it works in my favor.
Yeah.
You know, but sometimes it makes the crowd... And this is something that my buddy Al told me. He's been doing comedy for 30-plus years. He's a Houston legend, all this sort of stuff. He goes, what you need to start doing is making them uncomfortable a little bit, making them kind of think. And that's the biggest difference between the Boston comedy that I'm used to here and Houston. Like some of the more professional comics out here, they'll make you uncomfortable. They'll win you back, but there's a spot of being uncomfortable where you actually have to think outside the box. Like it's not just, here are the jokes, here's a dick joke, here's this joke, here's that joke, boom, 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 boom. Like they'll challenge you as a crowd. Like when I talk to you, we challenge each other. Like I grew up in Boston, you grew up in Louisiana. You're gonna have your view on life is gonna be so much like you've done all this travel. Your view on life is gonna be so much different. I'm gonna sit back after this conversation. I'm gonna digest it, and I'm like, holy shit, I never thought of it like that. Like you mentioned, you're going to Mexico and everybody's got their phones out. And you see it. Like you see it all the time. You know, you're at line at Starbucks. Everybody's got their phones out.
Well, even at the gym now, you have to mimic taking your AirPod out of your ear to talk to someone.
Right.
Like, hey, I want to say something to you.
Right.
So that they'll pull their AirPod out of their ear.
Right.
For the longest, I didn't wear anything on my ears at the gym because I wanted to make friends.
Right, right.
And I knew once I went to AirPods at the gym, I'm never going back.
Right.
Kind of like going black if I can make
Absolutely.
If I can make a racist joke.
Yeah, absolutely. It's your podcast. You know? But yeah, that's the thing. It's like, you know, like when you have, like Tracy, I'll go back to the Tracy, like she would challenge me. Like she would challenge me. You know, like she would challenge me. She would be like, about the way I thought, about the way I read, about, you know, the way I live my life. Like, that's what you want in a partner. Mm. You know, like not aggressively, but you get out of the interaction and be like, oh, my God, I never saw it that way.
Yeah.
I never saw it that way. It's the same thing with work. Like, you know, one of my coworkers, I wrote an email, and he was like, well, he felt like I was taking credit for his ideas, right? And I wasn't grandstanding or taking credit for his ideas. But now, like the younger me would have been like, what are you talking about? And I would have been confrontational with him. As a mentor now, because I'm dealing with younger kids or younger people, right, in my life, I can now take that and put yourself in that person's position. Like, okay, I could see why what I said affected you like that. I could see why you would think that way, right? Doesn't mean I'm right. Doesn't mean you're right. Let's come up with a middle ground and move on. And that's it. And just move on. With the joke that I told, it's funny between Marlo and I. I see the comic's point that called me out on it. You know, I saw the crowd's reaction. At the time, I moved on with my set. It's not an integral part of my set list. I could just easily drop it. Like, it's no big deal. Like, that's where you put your ego aside. Ego is the enemy.
Have you seen that diagram? It's old school, where the guy is on a whiteboard showing you that you want a woman that's this much crazy and this much beautiful.
Yeah.
See, everybody knows what I'm talking about. It's interesting. You say you want someone who will challenge you intellectually, and so if you are seeking or courting a woman, you do want someone who has the intellectual capacity to challenge you, because I live for those aha moments.
Right.
And that yes. I never would have dated a 22-year-old as a 35-year-old if she was your average white girl, if we're
continuing to be racist. Yeah, yeah. No,
but
no.
She was raised in a home where her parents didn't speak English. Her parents were raised not in poverty, they were raised in destitution. Her mom is one of 14 kids.
Wow.
They weren't raised in America where dad had a good job.
Right.
They were raised in Mexico.
You know, you're sharing a bedroom with four other people or more.
You start working at age 4 and a half.
Right. Gathering eggs, gathering the chickens.
Dad was one of 10 kids.
Oh, my God.
So they bring that to the marriage, her parents, my in-laws, and then she's raised completely different.
How
so? She was raised in poverty, but in American poverty.
Right.
So a higher standard of living.
Right, right, right. Well, you have electricity, you have gum and cheese, you have this, you have that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The HAISD school she went to, Spanish was the language that was spoken primarily.
Okay.
English was not spoken. But just being raised in this way made her so much different. Like, the way that you text with someone is so important. Like, you have to almost have the same text game with
right.
someone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if I'm texting with four different girls, and when you're starting to date, you're more than likely you're dating more than one girl. You're talking to more than
you
one
should
girl.
Be. You should be talking to more than one girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Best practices. Well, best practices, Brad.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's the funnel. Here's the funnel, right?
Yes. We're going to weed you out and you out.
Yeah, they weed themselves out with me. Yeah. They weed themselves out.
Most of the time.
Yeah, and that's okay.
But she spoke in complete sentences.
Right.
And I do too.
Right.
And I kind of need that. Like, I don't need, it bothers the hell out of me. You go to Mexico, everybody in Mexico texts this way. Hola, and then the next text is mi amigo, and then it's like donde está, and then it's like seven texts. So your phone is blowing up
every single text
for one sentence,
right?
Like for one thing,
right, right, right.
And it's like, why would they think that's a good idea? Here's another thing that bothers me about texting. People will send, and they do this. They might have an excuse in Mexico because they don't write their English as well as they speak it.
Yeah.
So they'll leave a message that's a minute and 47 seconds long that you have to listen to, like an audio message.
Right.
So they have an excuse. But people in America who do that because they're busy, but they think it's okay for the other person to sit there and listen to your message for a minute and 47 seconds, I'm like, fuck you. I'm not listening to your message.
I got a hack.
Okay.
I keep my mailbox full so they can't leave messages. The only one that complains about that is my mother. She's like, I tried to leave you a message. Your mailbox was full. And
that's
that's my hack.
Well, I have all kinds of hacks.
Give me one.
Okay. I don't have the only notifications I get are from WhatsApp.
And okay.
So I
okay.
don't get text notifications. If you were to text me, and it takes me 2 hours to respond, it's not because of a lack of respect or I don't like you. I don't see it. I have to search my text the way I would search email.
Really?
Yes, because I want to be proactive in my life.
You
want to
be present. Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I get it.
So I don't get Facebook dings, Instagram dings. I don't understand how anybody would want those interruptions in their day.
Right.
But evidently there's a dopamine hit that they get.
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe my brain is wired to where I don't get that dopamine hit. But my dopamine maybe comes from the fact that, like you said, I'm present, I'm aware, I'm learning. I don't want to be interrupted by just anybody.
Right. And as a parent of a young kid, you want to be and the story about your wife is amazing, and I'll tell you why. Your life is so unconventional.
That I had to find it unconventional?
No, because, like, think about it. Like, if you're dating somebody, and I'm not going to say white girl or whatever, that was raised in America in middle class or higher standards, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be used to those standards, right? When you travel, something is going to go awry. Whether it's like I had to go to Walmart. I'm sure you've got stories where you think you're going to be staying at one hotel and then you're staying in the youth hostel, or the air conditioning on the car breaks, or, you know, you can't get whatever, right? And if you're used to that lifestyle, right, you're going to be like, this is not the guy for me. This is not the person for me. Now, if you've come up hard, which it sounds like your wife, you know, and her parents have come up hard, you can appreciate the fact. Like, one of the trips I took recently, I was going to Austin and I got lost. And we went down Highway 20 from Austin to Houston, or maybe from San Antonio to Houston. I loved that. I wasn't on I-10. I got to see, like, the backcountry roads. I got to see farms. I got to see cows. I got to see all that stuff. I wasn't seeing IKEA. I wasn't seeing Buc-ee's. I wasn't seeing McDonald's. Like, it's okay to get lost. It's okay to get lost. It's okay for things to happen. The road less traveled. Yeah. That's embracing the suck. You know,
you appreciate it.
Yeah, because, I grew up in Massachusetts. So I come down here, and I'm like, oh, my God, look at this. You know, blue bonnets, right? And you go out, and, you know, like chicken fried steak and patios, and everybody engaged. I'm like, oh, my God, this is great. Yeah. And, like, down here, like, I walk down there, and there's Truck Yard, right? Have you been to the Truck Yard?
Mm-mm.
It's ghetto. But they got a Ferris wheel. What kind of a bar has a Ferris wheel? Like, I've never seen that. I'll never see that again. You come down here and you just see all sorts of different people, especially downtown. You know, you go to the Heights, it's a whole different vibe. You know, you go to Montrose, it's one neighborhood away. And that's, when you're an outsider, you can appreciate that.
There is so much diversity in Houston. Based on what you just said, like if you lived in Montrose or the Heights or the Galleria area or the Medical Center,
right?
There is so much diversity. So if you were to move from Boston to Houston and not come and stay here for a couple weeks first before you, for example, bought a place, would you be doing yourself a disservice or what?
I've had a couple friends come down here, you know, and they visited. You know, my best friend Nick, he comes down once a year. He's 6'5". He sleeps on this couch. We'll go out, and he'll be like, "Oh my God," you know, like look at this, like, "Oh my God," you know, like his eyes are like wide, and you're just going out, and we're just literally going down the street to watch a football game. But there's so much going on that's just so different, like all sorts of different people, all sorts of different ethnicities, all sorts of different food. Like what I loved about New York, if you were prejudiced against somebody, let's say you didn't like Pakistani people or whatever, I guarantee you a Pakistani person would sit right next to you on the subway for the entire ride.
Is that the universe?
That's the universe
conspiring.
Yeah,
I don't get it. Yeah.
Yeah, so let's say you didn't like Pakistani people,
yeah, yeah.
Right? You'd get on the subway at a certain stop. All of a sudden, the train would be filled with Pakistani people.
Why?
It's so diverse.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? Whatever was your thing, right? Your prejudice.
That's gonna happen.
It's gonna transgender. Yeah, this, that, whatever. Yeah. Like it's just the universe saying, "Hey, you know what? You got to grow up."
No, okay.
You know, like it's not them.
I'm gonna bombard you with this.
Yeah, it's not them. It's you.
It's you.
Right, and then once you start talking to these, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I went to Brooklyn. I met a lot of people that were like Pakistani or whatever. I don't know, Muslim, right?
Yeah.
And there was a lot of Muslim phobia. They were the nicest people to me. I don't know if they were nice to everybody else, but to me they were very accepting. They were nice. Like we played basketball together. It was around the time of the World Trade Center bombings and all that stuff. And they're like, "We're all not like this. We're all not like this." Like I worked in a Jamaican neighborhood, and I was like, I'd never been exposed to Jamaican culture, and it was awesome. Like I would go down to the Jamaican Pride Day, you know, and it was awesome. It was just, you know, big flow, the steel drums, and I'm like, oh my God, like this is same with Houston. You know, did you know they had two Martin Luther Day King Day parades here?
I didn't know.
Yeah, it's the only city I've ever been to that has had two Martin Luther King Day parades.
I wonder what's going to happen there, because Martin Luther King's dream has basically been achieved. And we still have a holiday to honor him. So his name sticks around, but it's like his message is getting lost. And that bothers me.
I don't know why we don't have a 9/11 day remembrance.
Yeah, we should have that too. That's a good point.
You know, that's one of those things. I'm like, it should be a national holiday, a day of remembrance, right? Like, you know, but you know what? You know, every time you say that, the message is out there, and we've achieved.
Lost.
Yeah, but there's always somebody will come in and you know, like with George Floyd, or there'll be some sort of racial incident. There's still a lot of prejudice out there. There's still,
yeah.
It's not prejudice; it's lack of knowledge.
Mm.
You know, like when you immerse yourself in a culture like you've been doing, like going down to Mexico or going down here, your worldviews of that culture is going to change. You're going to see things differently. Maybe you'll see, okay, maybe this is the one thing I don't like about Switzerland, but I like this, 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 and this about Switzerland. Maybe this is one thing I don't like about Mexico, but I can appreciate this, 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 and this about Mexico and Mexican people. You're not going to see Mexican people. You're going to see Mexican people different being immersed in Mexico than living in Houston being surrounded by Mexicans.
Okay, I've got to say this. My wife really appreciates the fact that I have been to San Miguel de Allende and Oaxaca and these more obscure parts of Mexico, not just Cancun, Tulum,
yeah,
Playa del Carmen.
Yeah.
And the reason is because in that those last three areas I mentioned, Playa del Carmen, Cancun, and Tulum, they call that the Riviera Maya.
Right, Yucatan, right, right. Peninsula. Yeah, it's a touristy part.
It's touristy, and so you will get scammed every transaction.
Right.
You count your change, and you realize you've been scammed the equivalent of a quarter. And the guy, even at the grocery store, if there are three people in line, he knows that you're not going to hold up the line and it's not worth your time to fight over a quarter. He gives you that quarter. You're going to end up giving that and more to the guy who bagged your groceries anyway.
Right.
But we have had so many incidents, and I'll just share this one story. There was a woman who was a friend of our family because she had driven us to the airport so many times. If we go from Cancun to Playa del Carmen, we'll take the bus, the ADO bus.
Okay.
Apple, Dog, Octopus.
The people's transportation.
It's like $11 a ticket.
Okay.
There's a Colectivo, which is a van you could take even cheaper. It'd probably be like $4.
Yeah. Brooklyn had a dollar van that went up and down Flatbush Ave. And you put a dollar in. This was before Uber. This was before Lyft. And it took you from one end of Brooklyn, and you'd literally be sitting there with everybody. And then it would take you to the other end of Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And it would just drop people off. Cool. A lot of churches did that. Go ahead. I apologize.
Don't apologize, because one thing that should be said is that Uber doesn't require masks anymore. Many people don't know that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just learned that yesterday. So we'll take a cab generally from Playa del Carmen to the airport, and it's three times the cost almost. But with a bus, you have all this luggage that you have to – you're probably going to be taking a cab to the bus station because you have so much luggage.
Right, right, right.
And so you might as well.
You guys are going down for a month.
We're down there for a month, so we have quite a bit of luggage.
Right.
One time I went to the airport with one of these four or five people that I had befriended. She had befriended the family. She knew my wife. She had met Aria, my baby, who was like 6 months at the time. So we had a relationship. We negotiated over text that she would take me to the airport for $35. We get to the airport, and she says that'll be $45. And I said, you said $35.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, no, sir, it's $45. And I said, I can't believe you would do this to me. Like, you know my family. We agreed.
Right, right, right.
And I speak enough Spanish to where it was said in Spanish. And she said, well, I'm going to get the police over here. And she thought that would scare me. And I said, well, great, get the police over here. Because I have text messages saying she's agreed to $35.
Right.
We show the cop that we've agreed to $35. Guess whose side the cop took?
Yours.
No. The Mexicans.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
It's that disgusting. And it's prevalent. It's the one downside of the Riviera Maya. And my wife claims it's because it's touristy. They're accustomed to it. But they skim something off the top every single time. You'll hand them a 20. They'll act like you handed them a 10. So just be very careful. Count your change.
Yeah.
It's the one part, because they know a lot of people go down there for a few days. They're there for vacation. They're there to spend money anyway. They're not going to count their change, but I'm different. I count my change.
Absolutely.
I don't like people to be screwed out of their hard-earned money. But a lot of people there, if you have money and they don't, they feel entitled to your money. So
yeah,
even win if you have it in writing with the police. So just be careful.
It's a have and have nots. That's what it is.
And what she's trying to tell me is that I'm so glad that you've been to these other parts of Mexico because it's not Mexican culture.
Right.
It's Riviera Maya culture where they'll try to scam you.
I was interviewing at the company that I'm at now. So I went to South Beach. So I see a drink special and I go, I'm going to get a margarita. Right. I thought it was like a $10 drink special. It was a little solo cup. And it was $25.
$25 US dollars,
right? Because they get – it's a tourist trap. Same thing with Faneuil Hall in Boston, right? Like the great thing about Houston is there's no tourist traps. There's no tourism in Houston.
Where were you?
I was in South Beach. Some random restaurant, right?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, all right. And I'm not a big drinker, right? So I'm just like, you know, I'm here. I might as well, you know, have one. And I'm thinking it's going to be $10. I got the bill. It was $25.
What did you do?
I paid it. Just
you're a better man than me.
You can't argue at that point with anybody. And the other thing about Miami is they include the tip, you know, and there's taxes and all this sort of stuff.
Okay.
But you know, when you go to these touristy places,
there's no way I would have taken that deal. I probably would have said, "Oh my God, I forgot my credit card."
Yeah. I that's what I should have said. Right? But you know what? I mean,
because it's true. I probably. You know, I don't have a credit card, so...
I don't have a credit card either. When you get off a cruise ship and you go to Senior Frogs, they're going to get your money one way or the other. It's when you start going to those off-the-beaten-paths, you know, where maybe you should or shouldn't go, that's when you start seeing, like, the real culture. That's when you start seeing the real people. You know, that's when you start eating the real food, and that's when you start getting the better deals.
You want to do some fun, quick questions before
sure.
we head
yeah,
out?
Yeah, 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 absolutely.
These usually lead to good discussions, so
all right.
They don't have to be quick. Is social media a net positive or net negative for society?
It's a net neutral.
Net neutral?
Because? Well, like, for example, like Facebook, I would say, or Instagram, right? 90% of it for me is just garbage. It's a lot of garbage. However, you know, there are people, Jeff Land, right? Bobby Riley. You know, they're out in Austin. So whenever I go to Austin, I'll message them. Hey, I'm in Austin. I would have never kept up with them. Yourself, like I thought you were in New Orleans, but your man overseas, you could be anywhere.
Yeah, and you hit me up and said,
I'm going to go to New Orleans,
yeah,
right? You know, I also get the opposite, right? Where it's like, I'm pro Biden, I'm pro Trump, I'm pro this, I'm pro... I don't want that stuff. Like, I don't need that stuff in my life.
What is most important to you in the next 2 to 3 years?
Me. That's the only way I can say it. I don't know how to, like, my own survival. Like, not like basic survival, like what your in-laws went through, but my own happiness, like my own well-being, like being my true self. That's I've had the trappings of success. I've had the trappings of failure. I just want to be my authentic self.
Your authentic self. And what does that mean?
It's evolving. It's, you know, part of it is going to be the artistic side of me and the comedy side of me. And part of it is going to be the business side of me. And part of it is going to be the intellectual side of me. I don't know what Miami's going to bring. I didn't know what Houston was going to bring, but I get the best out of it. Every place I've gone to, there's always been a lesson. I've always been the fish out of water. And it's accepting the fact that I'm that fish out of water and thriving in it. And I don't know what that's going to look like.
I tweeted yesterday, you're better off focusing on goodness than happiness. The world, too.
That's brilliant.
I think so, too. Otherwise, I wouldn't have tweeted it. And I don't know where the thought came from, but...
Yeah, I mean, happiness is fleeting, right?
It is.
You know, but goodness is a part of your DNA. Like, you know what the right thing is to do. It doesn't mean you do it all the time, but if you're a good person, like, you're a good person, Brad. You've never punched me in the face. You've never had an argument. Like, we get along really well. You know, you lead a good life. Does it mean you're a happy person? I think we're so complex as human beings, and if you focus on happiness, it can be detrimental to your happiness, right? But if you focus on goodness, like you were saying, and just try to do the good things, eventually you'll get the payoff. And you're a father now, like you don't, you know, that's the other thing. Like, your daughter is going to pick up so much from you. She's going to absorb. She's a sponge, you know. And if she sees you doing good things, she's going to be more apt to do good things. Like, her experience right now with all the travel, how many countries has she been to? How many different places?
Well, I keep telling the wife, we need to get going, because I think after two, you have to pay for a ticket. An airline ticket. So let's do as much traveling as we can before she turns two.
So how many places has she been to?
She really hasn't been that many places, but I'll tell you this. She was a totally different person when we traveled to Chicago, which is the same distance as going to Cancun.
Okay.
But she had aged. So when we went to Chicago, it was September. She was born in January, so she's, what, 8 months?
Yeah.
We just went to Mexico, and she had just turned a year. But she couldn't stay still in her seat when we went to Mexico.
Okay.
But she was the most well-behaved child in existence on the way to Chicago while we were in Chicago. She's a well-behaved child to begin with.
Yeah, she's
an angel. But it was different. So it'll be interesting to see how she changes. None of that answers your question. She's only been to Chicago and Mexico. Anytime we've gone to New Orleans, it's been in a car. That has changed.
How's her palate? Is she a picky eater, or is she like accepting of the different foods and the different cultures?
She's accepting of the different foods, which is wonderful. She's like her mama. When she struggles to eat, I play the airplane game with her.
I still do that with me.
You still do that with yourself?
With me, yeah.
Well, the plane needs a place to land.
Yeah, absolutely.
And she's got a great runway in her mouth. That tongue is the runway.
But that's the difference of a kid that travels and a kid that just lives like that suburban life. And the kid that has a suburban life, you know, they're going to go to TGI Fridays. They're going to have their chicken fingers. They're going to have their mashed potatoes. They're going to have their noodles with butter. A kid that travels, they're not going to have that option. You're taking that option away from them. Think about the experiences that she's having. It's not that Sesame Street in front of the TV, right? It's literally you're on a calle, right? Yeah. You're on a playa. You know, you've got an abuela. You've got a tia. You know, you're listening to a song that's in Spanish. Like
she does all the time.
Yeah, and that's something that's the best education you can give a kid, is that worldly education.
Well, I'm so glad to hear you say that, because I'm trying to talk my wife into homeschooling to where we're only teaching her 2 to 3 hours a day, and then she's getting like a cultural immersion in the afternoon, which I think, like you're saying, is the best education. But my wife seems opposed. I don't think she realizes that the 8 or 9 hours we spend in a school is just wasting time. It's just babysitting, because we need a place for kids to go while the parents go and make the dough.
Right. Well, I mean, it's
so
also like
teaching that much.
You're getting them prepared for a corporate culture, right, so to speak. Like they're taking standardized tests, and they're getting praised for standardized behavior, right? They're not thinking outside of the box, and that's the one thing that I've been able to do, to my detriment and to my salvation, is being able to think outside of, like, here's the box. I've never fit in the box. I am always outside of the box. And question things, right? Like, you know, maybe she goes to Russia and she goes, you know what? I don't believe what they're saying about Russia, because I've met Russian people. 2 years ago, we were all wearing masks. I mean, I'd go to the gym, you'd have your temperature check. Now you walk around Houston, unless you're flying an airplane, I don't see a lot of masks.
And even that is going away on many airlines.
Right. But, you know, 2 years ago, I mean, you know, and that's part of the reason I didn't have a TV, because that mass hysteria around COVID. When I moved down to Houston was a hotspot of COVID. And I had friends of mine that were, you know, like, you're signing your death sentence. Mm. Here I am 2 years later. Yeah, I had some symptoms, and I caught it for a little bit, but I was able to get through it, right? And now it's like, okay, now we've gotten through it. And my biggest concern for my kids is the socialization, because they got that, there's 2 years of their life that got interrupted.
Well, in 2 years, for how old is your youngest?
The twins are 13, Phoebe and Felicity.
Okay. And so they've been talking since they were, what, three, let's say?
Yeah.
So 10 years, 2 years out of 10, that's 20% of their life that's been taken from them, from a socialization aspect.
But think about this. They like, my daughter Felicity struggled with homeschooling and Zoom. Like, she got anxious. And I see your point. I see your point about school. The only thing that I would say is the socialization. Like, if you can have the, and I'm sure you'll find a way to have your kids socialized, right? The hardest part is, the reason why you and I succeed is you can throw us anywhere, literally anywhere. Like, we've had conversations, you know, we've been fish out of water, whatever, 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 all throughout our lives, right? Now, you take that away, like, my kids couldn't play soccer for a year and a half or whatever it was. My kids couldn't play basketball. My daughter couldn't perform in her theater. That to me is more important in some cases, the socialization, or they'd have to have, you know, Zoom. God, I hate Zoom. Like, I hate, I'm actually looking forward to being in an office when I get down to Florida, Miami, because I hate that, those interact, like, you can't tell if somebody's paying attention. You can't.
Yeah, you can't tell if people are making eye contact, right?
Cause they're on their phone, because I'm on my phone. Right, yeah. They're playing Wordle. They're doing this, and that's you know.
But I mean, even if they are paying attention to you, you're looking. A lot of people are looking at themselves, but even if you were looking into the right camera, you don't know if they're making eye contact. Am I making sense?
Yeah, yeah. To me, you are, and it's also like, you know, what you were saying about your phone. These kids are getting phones. They're not getting phones. Nobody gets a phone to make phone calls anymore.
Right.
Like, nobody gets phone calls anymore. Like, nobody gets mail anymore. Nobody gets personalized emails anymore, right? I got to, you know, for the podcast, I got a personalized email from you. But, you know, everything now is text. You know, hey, HBU, YD, what are you doing? WYD, what are you doing? And I, you know, like, but that skill that we grew up, like cursive, that skill... Like, I wonder how that's going to affect them in 10 years. And then you take the socialization aspect of school, like going to recess or going to gym class or eating lunch together.
My brother has two sons. I always wanted a son. In fact, by default, I would say, well, when he gets to be 13 or when his time for braces comes, it just automatically came out of my mouth. I don't know. I just always envisioned myself having a boy, to the point that when my mother-in-law found out we were having a girl, she asked my wife if I was upset. Now that I have a girl, I don't want a boy.
Right.
I mean, I just love it.
She's daddy's little princess. She's the princess.
She does things that
if she braids your hair, you're going to be like, this, thank you so much, sweetie. If she wants to paint your toenails, you'll be like, I'm wearing pink toenails tomorrow. Thank you so much.
Well, when she sees my toes now, she walks up to him and she goes,
I don't know
what she's doing.
It doesn't matter.
She's like tickling him or
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. That's the point.
Who cares? But that's beautiful.
It's beautiful, and it gives me an opportunity to give other people smiles by taking her in the stroller, knowing that she's going to be waving at people and making somebody's day. You know what I mean?
The story you told me about being in the elevator with a Russian lady, you know, because, like, let's face it, I don't want to talk to anybody. Like, honestly, there are days I'm just like, I don't want to talk to
certain days.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all have those days.
Yeah, but if you have an icebreaker like a kid and they start waving, it's the best natural icebreaker.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll buy that. Yeah, but she has so many opportunities to make somebody's day just by, like, if I whisper in her ear, give Harry a kissy, and she'll blow you a kiss. And
oh, like, my God. Oh, Brad, you just made my day.
Yeah.
That's pure. Like, that is so pure.
The fact that she has given me an opportunity to make someone else's day brings me so much joy.
That's pure. That's pure happiness. Love it. Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Keep your boy, God. Talking to God in front of somebody.
That's all right. That's okay.
I've never done that before.
I'm blessed. I have three girls and
oh, you do? See, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So my daughters, they were all born in Houston.
Okay.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Francis's middle name was Scargo after Lake Scargo in Cape Cod.
Ah, okay.
The twins, and you can Google this, are Phoebe Boston and Felicity Houston.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, but that's Texas is a part of my life. Texas is a part of their life, you know? And yeah, I'm from Massachusetts and all that stuff, but like there's so much, and I don't consider myself a Texan at all, but I appreciate everything that Texas has to offer. You know, we had this conversation. Like it's a great place to be.
And you said your kids, the twins, their Instagram is at strings by P and F. Is that an and sign or is it strings by the letter P
and
A N D F?
Yeah, it's Phoebe and Felicity. They're athletes and they all get straight A's, which I don't know. Okay. I want a genetic test on
why
that.
Why should I follow them?
Because they're cute. They come up as a marketing person.
Yeah.
Brad, they do some interesting stuff. Like okay. The way they use social media is so much different than the way we use social media.
Okay. I could probably learn a thing. Or
yeah.
Two.
You know, that's the thing.
Why should my wife follow them?
Because they're cute. They come up with cute little strings and bracelets that you can buy on Etsy. You know, they don't have jobs yet. But they're trying to make themselves
entrepreneurs.
Yeah, like a little, you know, you had a lemonade stand, you delivered papers, you did this, you know, you worked at Burger King. That's what they're looking to do.
I bought boxes of baseball cards for $40, and I would sell the 36 packs for $2 a pack.
Right,
so I'd make $32.
Yeah,
yeah,
but
like an 80% return.
I would just eat the gum. I would just eat the gum and then be like, why am I big?
Do you provide them with a little seed money?
I do. Yeah. What I'll do is I'll buy, I'll promote, I'll ask them if they need anything. They're like, no, Dad. Because they're twins and they do a lot of bracelets and I tried to give them some business advice.
Okay.
And they poo-pooed that. They were like, no, Dad. You know, if people have bought from them and they have like, they'll include a personalized note. And I'm like, wow, that is unbelievable.
The power of personal notes.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. I could talk about it all day. But, you know, the elder George Bush attributes his ascendance through the ranks. He was VP, of course.
Right.
He was head of the CIA. He was president of the United States.
Yeah.
He says handwritten personal notes are what got him there.
Right. Right. And that's what they've done. I mean, they personalize their notes. It's the roots of small business, you know, and they're learning what they're learning there can't be taught. They're learning marketing. They're learning pricing. They're learning customer service. They're learning all sorts of different things, you know.
And the idea of business school is almost a joke.
The idea of college now is a joke.
Yeah.
In some cases. I can see why people don't go to college. Like
you'd want the guy doing surgery on your brain to have gone to college.
Yeah.
But otherwise
I mean,
there are a few professions that college would be a necessity, but golly, there's a lot of shit out there that you do not need to go into debt for.
Yeah. I agree with you. I mean, sales, like what we do. I mean, I could have done this out of high school.
Yeah, and I do think that one of the ways when they get a stack of 50 resumes, one of the ways that they weed them out is, does this guy have a degree? No. Okay, put him on the side.
Right, right, right.
And it's ridiculous because you might have just passed on Harry Corsell and not known it.
They did that on purpose, Brad. It's okay. Yeah, you know what? I mean, I've had friends of mine that have gone to Harvard and are struggling. And I've had friends of mine that never went to college and just found their niche in life and just have gone with it. And now with social media, you know, you were talking about the podcast, especially with comedy, you don't need to be, you don't need to go up through the club ranks anymore. You can go up and get a following on Instagram. Like, you need 1,000 followers, you need 100 followers, you need 50 followers, and you can make a decent living off of that.
Yeah. Let's keep with quick questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry.
If you could spend a day with Dustin Pedroia or David Ortiz.
Oh, Big Poppy. He owns Boston.
Okay. If you could spend a day with Big Poppy or Tom Brady, who would it be?
Big Poppy. He's more fun. He's more fun. He's more Brady is you're not gonna have beers with Brady.
Brady has shown some personality on Twitter. You're not on Twitter.
No, I'm not on Twitter. But okay. But you know, I mean, you know, Brady is Brady, right? Okay. Big Poppy, you're gonna have, like, you can't go wrong. He's fun. Like, he's just big smile, big home run hitter. He's fun. I mean, I would rather be with Big Poppy than don't get me wrong, I'd love to be with Brady, but I think Big Poppy's a lot more fun. Jeter was my guy, and then I grew up with Lou Maloney. And okay. So he came up with the Red Sox.
Yeah.
He's out of Framingham. And he was my, like, he would bring in Nomar Garcia Parra into a little package store called Garbarino's Package Store in Framingham. And then Nomar went out to be Nomar. But at that point, he was just like some guy that he brought in.
When did you lose the accent? I noticed you don't say Nomar.
Depends on how many beers I drink.
Same here. I was in 9th grade. And I was talking to the coolest kid in class, in the 9th grade class.
It wasn't you?
No. I was new kid,
okay,
new school.
Okay, yeah.
I said to him, hey, bro, you got a quarter?
Yeah.
And he goes, are you black? I was like, no, but do you have that quarter or no?
Yeah.
And it was just the way I said, bro, you got a quarter.
Right.
And he was like, yeah, don't talk to me like that, bro.
Right. So, you know, and that's where the, you know, you got to fit in, right?
So what I did, actually, I had another girl that said, why do you talk so slow? This was probably a year and a half later. And the reason was because people couldn't understand me because of how fast I was talking.
Right.
And to give you an example, I changed my name from Bradley to Brad when I moved to Texas, because
okay.
I got tired of correcting people.
Right.
So where I'm from in South Louisiana, they drop the D and I'm just Bradley.
Okay.
And so when I'm asked my name in Texas and I tell them and they say, would you say Brad? And I was just like, yeah.
Yeah. It's easier that way.
And then
yeah.
I became Brad.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
Wow.
Yeah. You have a favorite book?
You know, I'll go to The Power of Myth by Joseph Campbell. It just kind of encapsulated a lot of what I believe in. You know, the hero's journey. It's a conversation between him and Bill Moyers, and I've given that book out to a number of my different friends. You know, Being Alive, Flow by my Mikhail Chiminski is obviously up there as well. Just different books at different times that I've read, and I'm like,
yes.
Oh my God, yeah. It goes into, like, really, you know, as a salesperson or as a comic, there's only so many stories you can tell, right? Man versus man, man versus food. And even as a comic, I was just having this conversation, there's only so many jokes you can tell. And it's about differentiating yourself. And so now that I'm getting older, I look for the differentiators.
That's so interesting. You think there's that stories are finite, that there are so many stories? Because you could create a story from just this conversation, like just what you did today. That could be a story.
Yeah, that could be a story. But like the good stories, there's going to be some tension, right? Like,
oh, I see.
Like, you're not going to be like, oh, I went to the grocery store and I had a great day. Mm. Like, I went to the grocery store, my bank card got hacked. I only have $7 in my account and I've got to pay rent tomorrow. That's a story. Not like I've got $80,000 in my bank account. I bought eggs. I overpaid for eggs. I went home. Who cares about that?
It's funny you're saying this because I just had a story pop up on my Facebook that was a reminder of 8 years ago or something.
Yeah.
And I remember that conversation with that. It's me holding my nephew. And he had just told a story to a room full of groomsmen. And I told him, I said, Noah, You always ask yourself before you tell a story, is this story worth telling?
Right, right. You know, like when you went to Mexico, right, and you were telling the story about the cab driver, and you showed him the text to the police guy, that's a story. Like we've all, that's a relatable story. Like we've all been there. We've all had to be like, oh, I've got the proof. This is an open and shut case.
Yes.
I've got this, 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 and this.
Yes.
You know, and this is somebody you trusted. It reminds me of the story of the, it's a fable, right? I love fables. It's a tortoise and a scorpion. They want to cross the river. And the tortoise goes to the scorpion, you're not going to sting me. And the scorpion goes, no. And then halfway through the trip, the scorpion stings him. And he goes, what do you expect? I'm a scorpion. That's in my nature, right? People are going to reveal themselves.
Yes.
People are going to reveal themselves. So that cab driver, they're going to reveal themselves time and time again. That's their true nature.
Are you familiar with Michael Malice?
Nope.
He quotes this a lot, and I love it. He says, when I am weaker than you, I ask you for freedom because that is according to your principles.
Right.
When I am stronger than you, I take away your freedom because that is according to my principles. I just found that to be appropriate.
I find that to be extremely appropriate.
If you were forced to live the rest of your life in an American city that is not Boston, what would it be?
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn. Do you have a favorite podcast?
A lot of sales podcasts. So
a lot of sales podcasts?
Yeah, I'm always trying to... That's my craft.
Right.
My craft is sales, so I'll listen to Challenger podcast. I'll listen to...
The Challenger podcast?
Yeah, on the Challenger sale.
Oh, that's my favorite sales book. I consider it the Bible of sales.
Yeah, yeah, and Sandler and all that stuff. So yeah. I consider it the Bible of sales too, but I don't listen to Joe Rogan. I don't listen to Bill Burr.
If you were a Jeopardy contestant and you got to choose the final category, what would you choose?
Places I've been to for 100, I don't know. You know,
places I've been to.
I'm really good at trivia. I don't know. You know what? I'd say 80s music. I'm really good with
80s music.
Yeah, I'm really good with 80s music.
Okay.
Like I can hear three notes and be like, oh, that's this song. Then that's that song. Like I'm like an idiot savant when it comes to 80s music. What about you? What would be your choice?
It'd have to be something to do with sports.
Yeah.
Just because I was obsessed with it as a kid, and people are impressed with what I remember about 80s and 90s. A lot of it has to do with Nintendo, like
yeah.
RBI Baseball.
Yeah.
I mean, you remember all the players because of that. If I said, follow the Moskva down to Gorky Park.
Yeah, that's the Scorpions.
Yeah, that's the song you just mentioned.
Yeah, there's a podcast on it. And I listened to it, I think it was two
so
summers.
So what is the Moskva?
The Moskva is a river. And it talked about the way... I haven't heard the podcast in a couple of years, but there was some connection between the managers and all that sort of stuff, and the CIA somehow got involved, and it helped to overthrow the Russian government.
Get out.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting.
So it helped lead to the Soviet Union.
Yeah, the fall of the Berlin Wall. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because the Scorpions were like the biggest German band ever.
I didn't know that.
Again, it kind of goes, and I don't know how true it is, but there's a certain element that we're being manipulated. And that's really what I got out of that podcast. We're being bombarded by manipulation. It's everything. Okay. Whether it's advertising, whether it's a TV show, whether it's a certain book or certain things. Like we're being bombarded and manipulated by everybody.
Well, and the internet has illustrated this, right? I mean, the fact that I couldn't send you that article on Biden's son's laptop in the days leading up to the election, that would be the equivalent of in 1966, I couldn't send you a letter in the mail that included that article from the newspaper.
Here's what the internet has done. Before the internet, there were facts, like actual facts. You know, you could argue them or whatever. Now, any point that you want to make, you can make because of, so if you can be pro-choice or pro-life, right? And the facts are there on both sides, right? You can be pro-Ukraine or anti or pro-Russia, and the internet will give you the argument for both sides.
Yeah. And is that based on your previous search history?
Or? No, it's just from what I see on. Sorry about
that's
that.
All right.
Yes, you know, it really is. When I see it most is in election time.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many people that are just so pro one party or another, and they're going to have the facts surrounding that party, and that's it. And you're not going to be able to change their mind whatsoever. But they want to have the ability to change your mind. You have to have, where's the news coming from?
You almost have to choose someone that you trust. And some people are going to trust Tucker Carlson. Others are going to trust Rachel Maddow.
Yeah, yeah. Al Jazeera, like I'll go on their newspaper every once in a while. You know why? Because it's so outside of everything that's being reported here that there's going to be elements of truth here. New York Times. I love the New York Times, right? I got to get back into reading the New York Times. I think it's or the Washington Times, right? It's non-partisan, right? Other newspapers, you can see the slant. Like, you absolutely see the slant, right? CNN and MSNBC, I mean, what's the news there? And how much of it is actual news and how much of it is manipulation or opinion?
Well, nowadays it's basically 99%,
right?
Or something like that.
Yeah, but that's what people don't get. You know, the people that were saying, "Well, MSNBC said this," or "CNN said this," those facts are both slanted.
Yeah, I can't believe. Well, I guess I can believe that someone would say in today's day and age, "Well, CNN said this,"
right?
And then try to pawn off a fact.
Right.
That's kind of weird.
Right. Right. Yeah. You've got to go in with, you know, a little bit of cynicism, right? Like, where is this coming on both sides? On both the liberal and the Democrat. I consider myself apolitical. Like, I really, 95% of what happens out there doesn't affect me. It really doesn't.
And it won't.
And it never will.
Yeah.
If Biden, there's no difference that I see if Biden's president or if Trump's president or if, you know, like all they're very similar, right, to me. And I don't want to get into it, but there's not a lot of differences.
You don't want to get into it. Why?
Ignorance is bliss.
Mm, okay.
You know, like I'm the happiest I've ever been because I don't get into these arguments.
That's a good point.
You know?
Okay, like, well, I won't get you into
that. No, I'm sure you could. I'm sure.
I could, yeah.
Yeah, and for the most part, Brad, because you're an educated guy, I'd be like, you know what? You got a good point.
Yeah.
And then I'd have to think about it a couple days, and then I'd be like, all right, yeah, he's got a good point here. Maybe he's off a little bit on here, and this one he's way off for my own taste, right?
Sure.
But, again, doesn't mean you're right or wrong. It's you have a different view. You grew up in Louisiana. You grew up in southern Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
Your viewpoint of life, for me, growing up in Boston, totally different. Like, you assume I like Dustin Pedroia. Okay, he's a good baseball player. But for me, if I had to start a baseball team, first draft choice, players I know, Big Poppy.
Okay. Well, I was close.
Yeah, you were
the Red Sox.
You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, you don't.
Well, dude, I pretty much nailed that.
You did. You nailed it. Yeah. There was only two choices, right? It was, you know, Roger Clemens, Big Poppy, or Pedroia, Veritek.
Pedro Martinez.
Martinez was a god.
Yeah.
That team that won in 2004, and this is why I loved them, they were the Cowboy Up team. I'm sure you remember that.
Yeah.
They called themselves the biggest bunch of idiots. They called themselves the biggest bunch of idiots. Like, that to me is that's pure baseball.
What is it about 80s music? Is it the diversity or the fact that MTV came along and made it visual?
Yeah, I think it's part of it. You know, I think it was so simple. You know, like I, you know, I love rap, right?
Yeah. Run DMC was a
oh,
big
yeah,
deal.
Oh, yeah, Run DMC.
Hair bands, though, were just as good, like Poison.
Yeah, Poison, Rat, all that. You know,
Def Leppard.
Def Leppard. I went to Van Hagar. Walking on Sunshine. Like you, it makes you think back to like where were you? Like yeah. you know, like you said, you know, like you'd wait for Thriller to come home.
Yeah.
I was in eighth grade. I was in seventh, eighth grade when that album came out. And literally, you could go through it and be like, yeah, PYT, this song, that song.
PYT.
Yeah, you know, and but it was a whole.
And you know what's great about music? Artists are making a big mistake nowadays, and I don't know if they realize it or not, but music used to be what it meant to you.
Right.
Right? When you hear Pretty Young Thing, you think about your time in eighth grade and
right.
maybe a Pretty Young Thing that you were out.
They were all Pretty
time.
Young Things in eighth grade.
I was a big Belle Biv DeVoe fan.
Yeah, BBD. Yeah, yeah.
And that girl is dope.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a girl that I think of when I think.
Cool. It's a time machine.
Yeah,
it's a time machine. I went to high school with guys that grew up with New Edition, and so New Edition just did a big.
Ralph T and Johnny.
Yeah, I'm friends with Ralph T on Facebook. He's got no idea who I am.
Get out.
Yeah, my buddy Walter and some other guy that I went to high school with. They were Metco kids. They were black kids that they used to bring in out to the suburbs.
Uh-huh.
And they were friends with Belle Biv DeVoe and New Edition somehow. And my buddy Joe Carlin ran into Ralph at a Dunkin' Donuts in Jamaica Plain. And I found him on Facebook through one of my other friends. And I sent him a friend request and he accepted. And then I get to see the New Edition, Bobby
cool.
Brown, all that stuff.
Bobby
you know, like,
B.
Yeah. You know,
that tape with Bobby B when he's got the gold watch and the gray suit.
Yeah.
Probably one of my favorites.
My Prerogative. My Prerogative. Like that whole album,
The Truth About Aroni.
Oh, Jesus! Stop! Right. I gotta go. I'm like chills. Oh my God! And you grew up in Southern Louisiana.
Yeah,
that's the connection. That's the connection. Like you can be. That's what people are missing these days. Like that. I try to listen to rap. You know, I went out with my friends yesterday. I had no idea what any of the songs were at all.
Well, let me introduce you to a few because I have some younger friends. This is one of the reasons I'm such an advocate for having friends of all ages.
Yeah, yeah.
It used to be, did you know Clayton Dorsett?
I don't.
Okay, so he came to Idera after you left, once we were in the AIG building.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Were you gone by then?
I was at Symantec at that time.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he came and he gave me a playlist. And I posted on Facebook one day that I needed help moving. How many people out of 100 would jump at that opportunity?
I got boxes right here.
Right. Zero.
Zero.
Right. Well, he sent me a message and said, hey, I'd be happy to help you move.
Yeah, that's
and
a friend. That's a friend.
And I hadn't seen him in years. And I took him to Salada. He wouldn't take payment. He, back in, this must have been 2013, sent me a list. And it was just fire. The list was so good.
Yeah.
And so a friend that can provide you with good music is worth his weight in gold.
Well, that's.
But I could give you some rap.
I'm sure. Comedy keeps me young because I'm around younger people.
Yeah, I could see that.
Like, it's not about being the funniest anymore or trying to get a sitcom deal. Like, for me, I can relate, like, to younger people. You know, guys in their 20s, guys in their 30s, guys who are just struggling in life, guys who are doing well in life, you know, guys. And just like I said, I'm at different clubs with different music all the time.
Well, dude, my brother took me to Rogan, and I'm sorry to interrupt
you.
Yeah,
no, please.
My brother took me to see Rogan in New Orleans with Chappelle. Rogan was with Chappelle.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't know we were also getting the roaster guy, who's awesome.
Dave Attell.
Dave,
I know who you're talking about.
The guy
David
who
Ross.
Roast. David Ross.
Yeah.
Thank you. Ross is his name. They were so good. They were all so good. They must have had a lineup of 6 or 7 people. You know who the best was?
No.
Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. He was better than Chappelle because Chappelle, at the time, I think this is September of last year, he had just got caught up in the transgender.
Yeah, he told a joke. And like, so he's the guy, he's like the OG, right? Like, he is the GOAT of comedy, right?
Yeah.
I would say Bill Burr and Chappelle are 1 and 2. And I say Bill Burr because I kind of know him, right? I know him a little bit. Like, he recognizes who I am. We had a conversation, you know, about when we, some of the clubs we started at with, like, years ago, like 20 years ago, Daisy Buchanan.
That's awesome.
And so, but Chappelle, like, he is the consummate pro. Like, he can just, he lives to be on stage. Bill Burr is a worker. Like, Bill Burr is methodical. Bill Burr has a set list. Bill Burr.
Like Seinfeld. Seinfeld.
Yeah, but Bill Burr, like, Seinfeld was a writer. Bill Burr is you know, he'll go into the crowd. He'll you know, he goes off the cuff sometimes. But he's always honing his craft. Like, he's always looking at videos. He's always doing this. You know, he had a lint roller before he went on stage at the Boston Garden. Nobody could fucking see. He's wearing a black shirt. Nobody is going to be, those lights are so bright, nobody's going to be able to see it. But that's the level of attention that he was paying before the show.
But yeah, I couldn't believe that Joe Rogan was the funniest.
Joe Rogan started off in Boston and he was filthy. He was known as a filthy comic. Then he went out and he went out to L.A. and he did sitcom News Radio. And that's where he got a little bit of heat. And he was also a martial artist. Like, he would tell my friends back in Boston, like, this is so easy. Like, anybody could do this. Yes and no. And it's like, you know, you meet a baseball player, it's like, what do you mean you can't hit a home run 400 feet? Like, it's easy. Right? Yes and no. You know, you got to have the genetics, you got to have timing, you got to have the mental aptitude for it. But Rogan got on News Radio, and then he was able to build on that. He was doing the MMA stuff after that. Fear Factor. So he's always put himself in the spotlight. And then it wasn't until the, like, his podcast is unbelievable. Like, that's, it's today's generation version of the Johnny Carson Show, the Tonight Show.
It's a good analogy.
Yeah.
I was so impressed that Joe Rogan was the best of that lineup, and the GOAT is in that lineup, but he was in a tough spot in his life. I mean, he had gone through it like the day before or 2 days before.
And that's, you have to be in that. As a performer, as a player, as an athlete, as a salesperson, as a father, like, you have to be healthy. And that's why I came to Houston, was to get healthy so that I could put myself in that spot.
Good point.
Because if you're not healthy mentally and physically, it's going to show up. It's going to manifest itself somehow.
It showed up. And it was the first thing he talked about. And it was like he was trying to get it out because it was the elephant in the room.
Right.
But he ended up making it 40% of his act,
right?
And it was just, well, that's, not it, funny. It's, and
stand-up is cathartic. Storytelling is cathartic. Like, when I'm going through stuff, you know, the first thing I did was when I broke up, when Amanda and I broke up, you know, I had Amanda jokes. And it helped. It's my coping mechanism. It helps me heal. It's how I connect with people. And that's why I've done so well at sales. That's why I can go. I have no fear about going to Miami because I lived in Brooklyn.
If you could go anywhere for 2 weeks, where would it be? Anywhere in the world?
Disney with my kids.
With your kids?
Yeah.
So I'm holding out on Disney and I'm holding out on the zoo. Let me tell you why.
Please.
So many people, Candace Hunter is one of them, who have told me that their kids enjoyed the pool in Florida more than Disney.
Yeah.
And Disney is very expensive. So it's almost like re-gifting, taking what you gave your one-year-old for her first birthday and then giving that same gift for her second birthday.
Right, right, right.
I kind of think of Disney the same way, like, take her, but know that she's going to get more out of the pool.
Yeah.
Or more out of the box than the gift. So I'm cognizant of that.
Yes, yes, yes. I like the box gift, yeah.
I refuse to take my daughter to the zoo, and it's going to be tough to rein in grandma and everybody to get on board with me. But when I went to Zambia on safari, it wasn't the wow that I was expecting, and it was because I had been to zoos all my life. So I'm looking at giraffes and elephants and hippos and stuff, and I'm like, I've seen all this. I stayed in a chalet on the water, and in the water were just hippos and crocs living together. And I mean, it was like 500 of each.
Wow.
And it was pretty cool to sit over the water on the balcony and watch them.
but it didn't have the same impact that it would have had had I not gone to the zoo.
Right.
So I'm going to try to have my daughter's first experience with these animals in their habitat.
Yeah, that makes zoo. When you break it down like that, it makes a lot more sense. Think about it. Like, have you ever been doing an experience and you're like, this is going to be the greatest experience of my life? And New Year's is like that. Mm-hmm. Every New Year's is like that. Yeah, this year's going to be different. I'm going to go to this big New Year's party. It's going to be the best experience of my life. And then you get there and it's like, ugh, what am I doing? Like, new drunk people, you know, they run out of food. They fail to do the 10, 9, 8 countdown the right way.
Amateur hour.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's it. But in your mind, you're like, oh, my God, New Year's. I've got to spend X amount on New Year's. It's going to be the best. You know, you believe the hype.
Yeah. No, you're right. Would you rather win a national championship or a gold medal?
A national championship. I played Division III college. We were horrible, but I think the team, you know, when I think about the college, the guys I played basketball with, like you played baseball. Like a gold medal is like, I think of the dream team. Like it's the best of the best. And they're going to be together for a season, right? Which is that championship season. Like, you know, when you win a national championship, that's a process. You start off freshman year, you suck. Sophomore year, you get a little bit better. Junior year, you make the playoffs. Then it's your senior year, and it all kind of gels together. And, you know, like I watch NCAA basketball. Any team can get hot at the right time and make that run.
Yeah. My wife, plug for her, she picked North Carolina to win the whole thing this year in the bracket. Yeah. Damn near won the bracket. Yeah. They were an 8 seed.
Well, what about that, the Fighting Peacocks out of New Jersey or whatever they were? The guy just got a job at Seton Hall, and he was, I forget who the team was. It was like the St. Joseph's or whatever. But there's always that team that has that run.
Yeah, it's always bothering me that I can't think of the name.
I can't think of it either. It was a bird. It was a team that had never been in there. They were the number 16 pick. They were out of New Jersey.
They were St. Peter's.
St. Peter's, yeah. They got hot at the right time.
Yeah.
They got hot at the right time. Yeah. Those kids are never going to forget that run.
Yeah. That's the beauty of basketball.
That's the beauty of all sports.
All sports. How you could not like sports is... And speaking of sales, one of the things I've been told is 86% of people are fans of sports. So you should be able to find common ground with sports.
Brad, that's the common denominator. That is the common... Like if even with the IT guys that we're speaking, who are the geekiest of the geeks, they will know enough about it's a common language,
yep.
Right?
Yeah.
I met OJ on Leo's 50th birthday.
OJ who?
That OJ. That OJ. Are you serious? Yeah. So my buddy Leo, who is him and Gangster Fred are like the two toughest guys I know. Pound for pound, like they're just beasts, right? Like, those are two guys I'm glad I'm friends with because I wouldn't want to fight. And I've never gotten in a fight with either one. So he turns 50. We go out on a catamaran. I get to his birthday party. He's living down in Tampa. I'm in the hotel. I'm in the Hilton. And I'm going up the elevator. And OJ walks into the elevator with me. He's got a guy. And I go, hi, I'm Harry. He goes, I'm OJ.
Enveloped your hand.
Yeah. He looks good. And I don't recognize anybody. And literally, like, you could be Brad Pitt, and I'd be like, who are you? Like, I just don't. But OJ. Like, it was OJ. Mm. The next day was Leo's 50th birthday party. It was like the hangover. Every time I hang out with Leo, it's like the hangover. They brought Leo in a wheelchair, right? He goes up to his room, takes a nap, wakes up at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. OJ's in our hotel in the Hilton. Somehow he runs into OJ. Somehow he gets OJ's phone, his cell phone. And I hear a knock on my door at like 1 o'clock in the morning, right? I'm half in, half out, or 2 o'clock in the morning. He's got OJ's phone. The screensaver is a black and white picture of OJ and Nicole getting married.
Oh, my.
The phone ringtone was like, ooh, like very creepy. Mm. Very, very creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just telling Leo, I'm like, just get rid of the fucking phone. Just put it anywhere. Give it to the front desk. He's like, no. I want to make sure that OJ gets this. So the next day, we're going to meet at Starbucks. Then OJ changes the plan, and we meet, like, right in the middle of the hotel. Like, he's a legitimately tough kid, and it's OJ. So you don't know what's going to happen.
I'll say.
Yeah, right. And
this is post conviction.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Okay. This was 3 years ago.
Okay.
So we meet in the middle of the hotel. OJ could not have been any nicer. Like, we were talking about Naked Gun 3.5 and the playing and all this, taking pictures with OJ. We give him back his phone. But it was, yeah, it was.
Did you post those? Because I don't.
I did. When it happened, I posted that. You know, it was like, this is the type of stuff that happens to me all the time. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
that's
this,
the horseshoe up your ass.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. Those are the experiences, like, you can't put money on. Like, you know, so I went to a Microsoft launch and, got introduced to Bill Gates, you know. I've been to football games with Gangsta Fred, and literally I'm this far from Tom Brady. This far from Tom Brady. One time I did stand up in the Boston Marathon in front of, thousands of people. These are the experiences that I somehow have gotten, and I couldn't tell you how I got them.
I want to go back to, we were talking about women, but you had great advice, which was, and I don't know if you said this explicitly, but I'm going to make it actionable advice to my audience if you didn't, which is travel with your woman before you marry her, for sure.
Yeah.
Because you're going to face, as you said, unexpected BS, and you want to see how she handles that.
You also want to know how you handle that.
And vice versa. Yeah. I was going to say.
I think traveling, because of its nature, like, I've got to move all this stuff to Miami, right? And so it's getting picked up on Tuesday, and it's getting shipped down to Miami. And I know I'm going to be driving down, and I hate driving. I can tell you right now, I'm going to get lost. Something's going to go wrong. But you know what? It's the journey, not the destination. It's being in the bus with a lady with a chicken and tamales, and it's, what am I going to see? Mm. Like, what am I going to see? What am I going to do? Like, what am I going to eat? It's the unknown.
So journaling does this for me.
Yeah.
It makes life pop. It makes you more aware.
Right.
And I'm sure comedy is that on steroids.
It's my coping mechanism.
But do you see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, no,
I pay
absolutely.
Attention because I'm going to be writing in my journal that night, but you might run into something that'll give you material that just kills
on
stage.
I know I am. Yeah. Part of the allure was, like, my buddy Brett, we're trying to figure it out so that I can get on stage. And I might go on and in New Orleans and just hit an open mic night. Like, I'm actually excited to see, like, if I get to go to Baton Rouge. You know, I'm a big basketball guy. I want to see where Pete Maravich played. Yeah, I want to see where Shaq played. I was having a conversation with my buddy Joe. We were talking about Chris Jackson, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, right?
Yep.
That's culturally for me, that's like a pilgrimage. Like, that's my pilgrimage, right?
Beautiful, man.
Yeah, and that's how I'm embracing it. Living down by the Houston Astros, like, never... Seventh inning stretch, deep in the heart of Texas. Love that song now. Love that song.
It's funny. My dad and I were just talking about on Easter Sunday. I must have been 8 years old, and he said, there's something different about my son. What is it? And then he figured it out. It was, I was shooting a jump shot, and nobody else was. And it was just, I had the upper body strength, but I learned it from watching Chris Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
He was shooting jump shots, number 35 for LSU. This would have been like 1988. And then we argued over whether he was number 3 or number 35, and I said he was number 35. I haven't Googled it yet, so we'll know soon what number
he was. Still playing in the Big 3 in that 3-on-3 basketball tournament, and I would tune in just to watch him.
The Big 3 being he, Shaq, and Stanley Roberts?
No. The Big 3 was a basketball 3-on-3 tournament that Ice Cube put together. For ex-players, and he's been playing at age probably 55, 56, and still dominating. Like, I follow, he's one of those guys that I follow on Facebook or Instagram or something, and I find him because of whatever he went through. Like, he was the original Colin Kaepernick, you know, and he got ousted. He got kicked out of Denver. It wasn't like Colin Kaepernick in the mid, like kneeling in the middle. He was way off to the side kneeling. Mm. And it was, and he was a Muslim and he was religious. He's never recovered. He's never gotten the recognition he deserves as a basketball player.
He was a stud.
Yeah.
Drazen Petrovic.
Yeah.
Was from that era too, maybe a little bit later. But he was the Croatian number three, died in a car accident.
Right.
When I went to Croatia, everybody knew Drazen Petrovic and wanted to talk
about
that
sport. That's sports. That's the commonality.
Yes. It was very cool because I didn't realize in 92 that we played Croatia in the final. The Dream Team did.
Right.
But everybody there knew it. And they knew Petrovic played in that game. He and Kukoc were the stud. And it all came back to me. I was like, oh, I had forgotten about all of that.
Right.
But that's former Yugoslavia, now Croatia.
Yeah, that's the commonality. Like, when you travel and you talk to somebody, you know, and you know, baseball, Miguel Cabrera in Venezuela, Oscar Schmidt in Argentina, it's the binding thread.
Sports, yeah, brings us together.
Yeah, or music, right?
There was a CEO of a Beverly Hills, it was a boutique staffing company. And I asked her, she's about my age, I asked her, what's the biggest struggle among people in their 20s? And she said, writing, by far. Writing is such an important skill that you and I know. And she said this, she said, that's where deals are done, a well-written email. A lot of times, building rapport is in the shaking hands and kissing babies, but a well-written email in today's business world is usually where deals get done. So you better learn to write. A lot of the people I coach are in their 20s. And she told me that people in their 20s, their biggest struggle is by far writing. So I told my kid, my 20-somethings, I said, I want you to send me a sample of your writing, and I'm going to look at it and edit it for you.
Yeah.
And all these guys, I mean, I vet them. They're open to criticism. They see it as feedback and data to be considered. And
you have to be open to criticism.
You have to be. So I wanted to read what the sample writing that this 20-something sent me.
Yeah.
Just to demonstrate to others what it looks like. Because this is about average what you would see. He says, name. So he didn't want to say a name, but let's say Harry.
Right.
And then there's no comma, there's no semicolon, colon, nothing, just Harry. The next line, there's no skipping of a line. It says, great to hear you and your family are comfortable with your accounts, with your current accounts, and don't have any questions or concerns. Moving forward, I'm always trying to add to my bank of knowledge with the families I'm working with. I would love to get together soon with sales off the table to ask some questions to help me with my growing business. Be happy to work with someone of your caliber moving forward. If there is anyone you know wanting to learn more of how I can help, please send them my way. Wishing y'all the best. Okay, so part of that is from my coaching, like the caliber thing. I have this dialogue that I use that I got from back when I was in real estate when I would part. Better to memorize a script. You're going to make the script your own, so it's not going to sound like a script.
Right.
But better to say this than spend $5,000 in marketing costs that go into a black hole and you don't know if you're getting your return on investment.
Right.
It goes like this. By the way, Harry, if you come across somebody of your caliber that would be interested in the level of service I provide, man, would you let me know? I'd really appreciate that.
Brad, I can think of one person of my caliber that could probably use your services right now, and you're speaking with him.
Okay. So I've used that dialogue 10,000 times. I've never said it the same way twice.
Right.
So I'm having these 20-somethings close their calls with me in May with that dialogue, their version of that dialogue. So that said, he's one of them. He's a salesperson. So I said, Above the line is the email you sent me. I'm going to make it better. Remember to remove yourself from the conversation. It's about them
right,
always.
Right, yes,
and
yes.
It has nothing to do with you. Below the line is 10x better. I said, hi, Jim, comma, space. Great to hear from you today. Period. And I'm glad your family finances are in order. Period. Relative to guys in your situation, you're killing it or you're thriving or whatever. I don't know the guy.
It just depends on the context. Yeah, yeah.
And then the next paragraph, because I believe internet writing is different from what we were taught in school. Well, internet writing paragraph should be 2 to 3 sentences at
right,
most.
Right, right, right. Well, a lot of it now is text. It's text writing.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
It's LOL. It's smiley face. It's, yeah. You know, I mean, that's why, my grammar's always been horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But with texting.
You're golden.
I'm still, you know, but I have a friend of mine who's older. He was a CFO at a company, very bright guy. He texts like the way it should be, semicolons and proper punctuation and everything. Anybody that texts me that's under 30, it's abbreviations. It's WYD. It's LOL. It's this. Mm-hmm. But that's what's making it into emails.
Yeah. Yeah.
How many emails have you gotten with an emoticon or a smiley face?
Well, I retired 7 years ago, so like none.
Even personally, spam emails, personal emails.
I don't know, but I've gotten into sending a laughing emoji after I want to say something funny. And you know why? Because I've been on buses around the world, and I see girls texting, and they're texting 18 people at the same time. So they go, brrr, boom, and then they move that screen to the other app that they're texting with. They don't stop and think, oh, this is what Harry is trying to say.
Right.
So that's part of why they're so literal, is because they're not thinking, oh, this is how Brad is. This is what Brad means.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so therefore you have to put the LOL, you have to put the laughing face. Otherwise, it's going to be misconstrued.
Sarcasm doesn't get picked up in emails or texts.
Right, especially texts, because like I said, these young girls that are 24 years old, they're getting 17, 18 of them at a time, and they don't have time to think, well, what does Harry mean by that?
Right, right. No, even people our age. Like, I will expressively say LOL. I will expressively
I do
say.
Too.
Yeah.
Now I do.
Yeah. Otherwise, they're like, what do you mean you want to kill babies in China?
Right. Yeah. Okay, so I said, great to hear from you today, and I'm glad your family finances are in order. Relative to guys in your situation, you're doing really well. But I want you to know, if you ever face uncertainty in the future or feel less than completely satisfied with the level of service you're being provided by blank, you know where to find me. Sincerely, whoever, cell phone underneath that.
Perfect.
You're building a relationship.
That's what people don't get.
So his email is very common, where they just say the name, they don't put a comma. The next line is, there's no space between, what do they call it, a salutation?
Yeah.
Greeting.
Yeah.
And the next, there's no, I mean, look at that. There's no separation between the paragraphs.
Yeah, wish y'all.
And it's rare in today's day and age because everybody thinks they know it all. And I don't know if that's Google in their pocket at all times.
No,
I don't know what it is.
It's ego. I ask for the negative feedback first. Like, what can I improve on? What can I get better? Whether it's an athlete or a performer or a salesperson, like, we're all our harshest critics because we want more. Like, I'm sure you listen to your podcast differently than I will. Like, I'm going to listen to this podcast and I'm like, okay, I was pretty entertaining. You're going to listen to this podcast and I'm like, what questions could I have asked?
Mm-hmm.
What could I have done better? What could I have interjected? What could I have edited this? Because it's your livelihood.
It's so funny you say that, because when you started talking about that, I went, I shouldn't have done that. And so I backed away, because the listener doesn't want to hear the host go, after everything you say.
Yeah, but it's a process, right?
Right.
It's a process, and for me being here and you going, it means I hit a certain point, right? Like I made you.
But
think,
I don't want to overdo it.
Right, but I made you think about something that you normally wouldn't have thought of,
true,
right?
True.
And so. And you're acknowledging, and it's tough. And I see what the audience is saying. You're like, I don't want to hear Brad say, like, that's just, you know. But as a guest, that means a lot.
Okay.
Stop that.
Okay. Yeah. See, that's the thing.
Yeah.
I can overdo it.
No.
Because was that last one worth it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, at the end of the day, it's a conversation, yeah, right? At the end of the day, this podcast is a conversation, and a great conversation, right? And I just I really enjoyed being on this podcast. Like, this has been like, if I were to think of a way to end my stint in Houston, this is it.
Oh man!
No, seriously. Like you know, because you know, you saw the evolution of where I came from when I got here 13 years ago, 15 years ago, right? We worked at IDEA together. And I've seen your evolution. You went from being a cocky little sales guy, and I was a cocky little sales guy, and now you've carved out this non-traditional life. And I look at it and I go, wow. And then I look at what I've done in Houston over the past 2 years, and you were one of the first guys I ran into at the gym, and everything that you said to me 2 years ago, or nearly 2 years ago, about Houston being a great space and a great place, but there's also other things. So I think this is a good way to encapsulate everything I've learned here.
Yeah. That is beautifully said.
Friends, you just heard Harry say that this podcast was a great way for him to end his stint in Houston. And I couldn't think of a better way to close this episode, so that's where I left it. One thing you notice, there's a common thread among my successful buddies that I've had on the show. I don't know if you notice what it is, but I'll tell you if not. And it's a strong willingness to serve others. I see it in Harry. You heard him talk about Al-Anon, which I wasn't aware of until I looked it up afterward. But it's Partners of Alcoholics, and that's service. I like the fact that Harry talked about journaling and how it forces you to be a grateful person. And not comparing yourself to others. Journaling, I believe, almost requires that you compare yourself to yourself. And maybe the greatest reason to be a quote-unquote success, or perhaps the most rewarding part of having successes, is it then gives you the opportunity to coach others on how you did it. And I have no doubt in my mind that, as we talked about happiness, that the majority of happiness comes from subtraction, more so than addition, especially as you get older. So simplifying your lifestyle is something we talked about. If you can simplify your life as much as you can while still being happy, That's it. That's enough is what you want to get to. And so many people don't know what enough is. And so they continue to chase air. But mentoring others is something Harry is doing now. And I just love that. And I loved being a part of this episode. You hopefully enjoyed it. And if you did, I want you to copy the link and please share it with a friend. Thank you for tuning in. I never take it lightly that you've taken your time to listen to the show. And this was I really enjoyed this one. I mean, Wrigley Field, Fenway Park, there was even an emotional part of it. Do you remember when Harry's voice cracked? And then he talked about taking his kids to Disney World if I gave him 2 weeks to do anything he wanted to do. That's what he said. He'd take his kids to Disney, and I thought that was beautiful too. So, beautiful episode, hilarious episode, informative. I learned a lot. It was intellectual at times. one of my favorites. I hope you enjoyed it too. Again, folks, thank you for tuning in. If you wish to follow my adventures, I am at @man_overseas on Instagram, which is where I spend probably most of my social media time. And then my Twitter is the same, @man_overseas. Harry Corsell, you can find on Facebook, and he is probably my favorite Facebook follow. Following stand-up comedians can add a little bit to your day, a little joy to your day. So I encourage you to follow him. Thank you, folks.